break up today, but I normally mirror whatever it is you're doing. Perhaps I've actually got a little bit early. I've got premature celebration going on. So there is no end of term feeling in the air, that which causes me to resist some of the temptation to start looking back, perhaps, rather than looking forward. If we were to try to distill down to the single most significant moments of the year, I suspect we'd probably all agree. But I want to begin with a very live, a very current story, and the, to my mind, it, actually incomprehensible intervention of Kemi Badenoch on the misogyny story.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has thanked EU leaders after they agreed a huge interest-free loan for Kyiv. The £78 billion should support Ukraine's military and economic needs over the next 2 years. It'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. The Shadow Housing Secretary, Sir James Cleverley, told LBC it's vital that financial help continues.
We have to send the message both to Moscow and everywhere else in the world that we don't run out of steam, that we don't throw our friends and allies under the bus just because this conflict has run on for years. We've got to stay strong, we've got to support the Ukrainians, and ultimately we've got to make sure that Russia pays reparations to Ukraine after this war is finished.
Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's reported a Chinese group was behind the hack, but ministers say it's not clear who's to blame. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
We've had it confirmed this morning that the Foreign Office was hacked back in October, that there was data taken as part of that, and an investigation is underway. Now, there had been reports last night that thousands of confidential documents, potentially including the details of visa applicants, had been taken, although we are told this morning from ministers that they're pretty confident information about individual people is not at risk here.
Australia is to open a new gun buyback scheme in response to the Bondi terror attack. Federal and state authorities are bringing in new measures after 15 people were killed at a Hanukkah event on Sunday. A target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. The goal to reduce the proportion of preterm births by a quarter was introduced 8 years ago. The Department of Health says it remains determined to transform maternity care. Essex Police has confirmed it will not open an inquiry into claims Reform UK broke election spending rules. It says the report related to Nigel Farage's constituency in Clacton falls outside of a statutory time limit. England's prospects are bleak after day three of the third Ashes test in Adelaide. Australia reached the close of play on 271 for four in their second innings, leading the visitors by 356 runs. Travis Head is 142 not out. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 5 points at 98.43. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, driest in the south and east, a high of 11 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do you know what that little pause was for there? Just to make sure that Keith was paying attention. No, it wasn't. That little pause was because I know what I'm going to be talking about in the first hour. But the second hour, this is my final show of the year. I'm not going to labour that point because I fully appreciate you're probably not clocking off yet. Indeed, if at all, many people working through the Christmas period, including some of my colleagues. But it is an opportune moment to have a little bit of contemplation of the year that has passed. And if we were to boil down to the most significant stories of the moment, I think in terms of international relations, in terms of the world that we inhabit, in fact, then it would be the moment that Donald Trump destroyed everything that the West has held dear for the best part of 80 years in the Oval Office when Volodymyr Zelensky visited. And the way my mind works is I've got that on one hand. I'm thinking about what we might discuss in the second hour, which will be a sort of explain to me the significance of dot, 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 or explain to me why this happened, dot, dot, dot. And the obvious one is the Oval Office. But do you know what the other one is? At the other end of the swimming pool, very, very much in the shallow end, the one that I am not equally fascinated by, because my fascination is of a very different flavour, but the Coldplay couple, the female half of the so-called Coldplay couple, has given an interview which makes it pretty clear that she is a woman much, much, much more sinned against than sinning. You read some of the statistics attached to the virality of that moment and your mind boggles. So I am drawn also to the question of why that story went so bonkers. But whether or not you and I, even as the year draws to a close, can do a double header, whether we can keep two plates spinning in the same hour, one of which looks at the collapse of the post-war order, and one of which looks at an incredibly modern moment of virality and essentially trivia, and poses the same question, I do not know. I do not know. So I will I'll leave that on the board. Lewis Goodall in the chair at the start of next week, by the way, in case you were worried. And given some of the people that have sat in this chair during previous holidays, I think you'd be perfectly entitled to be very worried indeed. But fear not. Lewis is stepping up to the plate. I don't know whether you were listening yesterday. If you were, you will have heard a succession of mothers, and I don't know why. I mentioned it at the outset, and then I realised that I was in danger of actually discouraging people from ringing in. It is always a conversation dominated by mothers. When we talk about the explosion of misogynistic attitudes among young men, among boys and young men in this country, it is always mothers who ring me. I came to it late. Sheila got there much sooner. I felt wrongly, completely wrongly. I want to stress that without any quibbling or qualification. I ignored Andrew Tate because I found him ridiculous. But the line between ridiculous and dangerous is often invisible. And I should not have done so. We should have been asking some of these questions even a year or more before we actually did. It's scant defence that Sheila got there first, and she got there in style. But it does at least mean that you had the opportunity and you were made aware of these looming and growing problems, these hideous developments. I don't know what the culmination would be. We may not even have reached the culmination yet. But I ignored it because I found him and his universe so obviously ridiculous that I couldn't take it seriously. And that was a huge mistake, because it doesn't matter what I take seriously. It matters what your son takes seriously. And if your son is taking this poison seriously, then we have a problem. You have a problem as a parent. I have a problem as a concerned friend. And we have a problem as members of the same society. So if you weren't listening yesterday, a couple of statistics that still stop me in my tracks. Government research suggesting that 40% of teenagers in relationships are a victim of abuse, of what we call relationship abuse. Even more staggeringly, more than 40%. So I think in, you know, headline terms, we could say almost half of young men hold a positive view of misogynist Andrew Tate. Almost half of young men hold a positive view of a man who essentially teaches your sons that women are there to be exploited, that they are measurably inferior, that they are not fully functioning or valid human beings. And your sons hold a positive view of him. Now, don't at me to tell me that your sons don't. I used to be a bit more impatient than I am now with this. But I do get it. You're not paying full attention. Your radio's burbling away in the background. You don't know who I am. And you think you just heard me say that all boys love Andrew Tate and it's all your fault. Of course, that's not true. I don't like the slightly smug confidence of, and I used to be victim of this, I used to suffer from this, thinking that you've got everything right, therefore you don't need to worry about it. You could have four children, and indeed we spoke to mothers yesterday in precisely this category. You can have three boys, in the same family with the same influences and the same parents and more or less the same life experiences and the same schooling and the same education and very, very different outlooks and attitudes. We don't know why. Humanity itself is like alchemy. There is no objective algorithm for behaviour choice or for defining paths that children will go down. Nature versus nurture is an age-old argument for a reason. But I just want to make that absolutely clear. It is so easy, and I understand why we do it. We do it because it's reassuring. But it's so pointless to sort of come up with a single-syllable answer or a two-syllable, a single-word answer to a really complicated question like parents, or indeed Andrew Tate. It is going to be complicated, and some people are going to be caught up in this in ways that other people are not, and there are going to be degrees of being caught up in it. So these are statistics, all right? 15% of teenagers in relationships had suffered abuse, including being pressured into sex, being physically hurt, or having, and this is, I think, the sort of the gateway to understanding the scale of the problem, having explicit images shared online without their consent. And listen, we can even perhaps moderate the word online in that sentence and point out that it will involve boys in your daughter's class being shown nudes of her that she intended only for the eyes of her boyfriend or of one boy. I know, again, it sounds very naive, but I tried it myself. I think it worked. To the best of my knowledge, it worked. Don't send pictures of your naked body to anybody ever. But if mum and dad are doing it, new relationships, dating, you can't go on, what's it called, Tinder? We discovered a couple of years ago without having your inbox absolutely overflowing with pictures of strange men's privates. I mean, I don't know how feasible it is even in the modern world to offer that advice, to offer that caution. But you know that it is an epidemic. You know that it's a massive problem, right? The sharing of nudes is actually an offence because you are by definition underage and therefore technically you're disseminating images of child sex abuse or child pornography, if you still want to use that slightly inappropriate phrase. More than a quarter of 13 to 17-year-olds surveyed were in relationships. So when you hear that 15% of a quarter, you get an idea of the scale, but the numbers who have reported bad experiences of pictures being shared are chilling. All of which is just there. It's just there. And it's the backdrop against which the government has announced a plan, a scheme, a fairly serious attempt to help teachers and parents and boys overcome this very modern problem, to get through it. And it didn't cross my mind that anybody would have a problem with it. I'm such a sweet summer child some mornings. It did not cross my mind that anybody would have a problem with it. Here's the front line. I mean, the Daily Telegraph. Let me turn to the Daily Telegraph. Ordinarily, the single most bonkers organ in our islands. But on this, they can see things fairly clearly. All schoolboys will be taught how to respect women and girls to stem the rise in misogyny and reduce sexual violence. To which who on earth responds down with that sort of thing? All schoolboys will be taught how to respect women and girls to stem the rise in misogyny and reduce sexual violence. Hands up if you think that's a bad idea. Well, that's what I thought. But here is Kemi Badenoch attacking it. Here is the leader of His Majesty's opposition finding a problem in a plan to promote, quote, healthy relationships. Here is the leader of the opposition claiming that the real problem is foreign men. I'm pretty sure that the instances of young women and girls sharing footage, sharing film, sharing photos that they massively and horribly and traumatically regret moments later with classmates or boyfriends, days later, weeks later, I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with immigration. I'm pretty sure that these girls who are in relationships with boys in their schools are not somehow victims of Kemi Badenoch's immigration fever dreams. I'm pretty sure that the 40%, the nearly half, the more than 40% of young men who hold a positive view of the vile misogynist Andrew Tate. Is that the fault of immigrants, Kemi Badenoch? Is that the fault of brown people? Is that the fault of foreigners? The fact that our sons and our nephews, our godsons and our friends' children have ended up in thrall to a man who routinely promotes appalling treatment of women. And, of course, is facing charges for all manner of hideous offences. And, perhaps, relevantly, is also the bloke that Nigel Farage turns to for his information and reliable news when he's trying to make sense of a crime not committed by an immigrant. So, what is she doing? And, listen, this probably won't sound sincere to you, but I don't actually want this to be a hatchet job. I think, and of course it always sounds, it always sounds fork-tongued. There's something wrong with this person. You hear about a story, a plan to teach, and I'll quote it again from the Telegraph, the Bible, if you like, the house journal of the weirdest and the wrongest people in the country. Even they on this can see the sense. All schoolboys will be taught how to respect women and girls to stem the rise in misogyny and reduce sexual violence. Step forward if you've got a problem with this. Oh, lookity, it's the leader of the opposition. Kemi Badenoch has insisted that young British boys are not to blame for violence against women and girls, and focusing on them is a distraction. Nearly half of young men in this country have a positive view of a vile misogynist. But it's a distraction from immigration, from cultures that don't respect women. Yeah, cultures that don't respect women. It's a Reform UK MP, was it, who'd served time for battering an ex-girlfriend? Cultures that don't respect women. It was Nigel Farage, I think, who talked about it being locker room talk when Donald Trump boasted about sexually assaulting women when he met them. Which culture are they from? The cultures that don't respect women. The High Court judges who used to tell rape victims that they had what was coming to them because they were wearing short skirts. The tabloid trope about women who were asking for it. The clock that I think was ticking towards Charlotte Church's 16th birthday, at which point she would become, quotes, legal, end quotes. What culture was that, Kemi Badenoch? What culture does Andrew Tate come from? Kuala Lumpur, Ulaanbaatar, Pakistan? Every culture, every community, every population has problems with misogyny. Every single one. And to say that we don't, it's all the fault of the foreigners, is one of the hardest things to understand that I've come across this year. So, let's try to understand it, okay? Some of the things that are happening. A ban on apps that allow something called nudification. So kids, and of course adults, who will also be subject to the same ban, can put very realistic images of someone they know online, naked, even though it's not real. I the trauma of that. I've spoken to women, I think it was Laura Bates, who had their own images superimposed onto pornographic images. It's a traumatic experience. It's a horrible experience for an adult. Imagine what it would be like for a girl, for a younger woman. Tech companies like Apple and Google are going to be told to bar children from being able to take, share or view nude images. But this is a distraction from foreigners, according to Kemi Badenoch. They're not going to be able to share or view nude images. They're not going to be able to use their phones to prevent, to conduct sexual extortion and abuse. But this is a distraction. Why? Why is she doing the genuine question? Why is she doing this? That's what I want to know. Listen, for the avoidance of doubt, misogyny exists everywhere. And some countries, some cultures lag behind us. They're roughly where we were in, say, the 18th century or in medieval times, or the 19th century. I mean, look at the vote. It's a 20th century arrival for women. So it's a human problem, this. It's a problem of patriarchy. It is not a problem of skin colour or even a problem of religion, because we were a Christian country when our king was chopping his wife's head off for the crime of allegedly having sex with somebody else. It is a problem of humanity, a problem of patriarchy and a problem of masculinity. That is obvious to anybody. I mean, genuinely anybody. So why is Kemi Badenoch objecting to the idea that we should be helping parents, teachers and young boys avoid the siren lure of misogyny, sexual exploitation and potentially violence? Why is she doing this? I do not understand. And you can tell me. 0345 6060 973 is the number that we need, that you need. What is she playing at? And I'm cross because I think this is dangerous and borderline disgusting, but I'm also strangely sympathetic. What an extraordinarily heartbreaking response to an obvious, obvious problem. To say, don't worry about the problem. Look, there's some foreigners over there. Worry about them. Why is she doing that? What, and I ask this question advisedly, what on earth is wrong with her? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
At Lidl, get our deluxe Winter Wonderland Chocolate Village cheesecake with gooey caramel chocolate ganache and a crumbly base. Only £6.99 with Lidl Plus. And it's Good Housekeeping Institute taste approved. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv. Ends 24th of the 12th.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 10:21. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Kemi Badenoch doesn't want a generation of young men who support and admire Andrew Tate in unimaginable numbers to be taught, to be taught to respect the opposite sex. Think of all the calls you've heard on LBC from mums concerned about their own sons, reporting overheard conversations, reporting behaviours, and then mums reporting things that have happened to their daughters. The mother yesterday, whose daughter was in receipt of unsolicited, to coin a phrase, pictures of a classmate's penis, and she went to the school to ask for help, and the school suggested that she might like to encourage her daughter to spend less time on social media. Should we be thinking about that? Should we be focusing about that? Should we be worrying about that? No. No, we should be, well, I'm going to quote Kemi Badenoch now, putting police officers on the street, stopping people who come from cultures that don't respect women coming to our country, well, that's the last state visit off the menu, foreign criminals being removed as soon as they commit crimes, those are the sort of things that will make a difference. What difference will those things make to the young girl being sent unwanted pictures of her classmate's penis? What difference will it make to the boys who think Andrew Tate is the original G, or whatever the correct terminology is. Don't laugh at me for being old. It's just so obvious. I wonder whether part of my animation this morning is born of the fact that it took me a while for the penny to drop. So my impatience with people who are even slower on the uptake than I am is perhaps a little unfair. I don't know. But the phone lines are open. Jane's on the wheel. Jane, what would you like to say?
Hello. My first time calling you. I have called to LBC before.
Okay, well, this is the big one, Jane. This is the big one.
This is the big one. I like your show the best. Don't tell everyone else.
Thank you.
So, I don't know, as a parent, I'm a survivor of sexual assault, different ages, different perpetrators.
Oh,
all of them were not to go into race, but white, British. So I found what Kemi Badenoch said. It made me really angry the moment that I heard it, because I was like, you're just discounting all these women and girls. but they don't matter because their perpetrators weren't illegals or immigrants.
That's what you heard, is it? Because I don't want to put words into your mouth.
That's how I felt when I heard her statement as a woman.
But everybody knows that the most likely perpetrator of sexual abuse against a woman or a girl is going to be someone that is known to them and more often than not a member of their own family. Everybody knows
Absolutely. And all the, you know, around consent, I was talking to your staff about, yes. I've got a young boy and from when they were like young enough to understand that no means no, I taught them the words no means no. When someone says stop, you stop. Even if that's, you know, playing a game, rough play, being both, so that they learn their boundaries. Because one day they're going to be young men.
And sadly, you know? For want of a better word, that lesson seems to be more important now than it was, for example, 10 years ago. It wasn't even a lesson that was considered important 50 years. I mean, this is a country, and forgive me, Jane, I'm going to use a word that may trigger you slightly, so I'll give you warning in advance.
Okay.
But this is a country where you couldn't, where raping your own wife was not a legally possible act until, during the course of my lifetime, the law changed. You couldn't rape your own wife because the concept of consent was so anachronistic and wrong. That legislation, I only discovered this researching a book, to my shame. I didn't even know it. I was never taught it. You couldn't, it was legally impossible to rape your own wife. It wasn't an offence on our own statute books. And we're supposed to be focusing entirely on foreigners.
Mine was a partner, and I can't tell you, as a 19-year-old, and you wrestle with yourself. I'm a very stable person, by the way, still. I've been through lots of therapy. But, you wrestled with it for years. Is this my fault? Did I say no? Did I say stop? You know? And you keep saying, did I say no? Did I say no? Did I say no? And that's why I've worked. I do believe that we do need to tackle this, you know, with young men and boys of a certain age, yes, but teenagers.
This is the thing that is
about younger.
Yeah,
you can teach children about no means no from a very young age without bringing sex into it. Just learning no means no. Stop. And when someone does that, you stop.
This is another one of those issues. And there's been a few lately where the single worst thing you can do is treat it as a debate. Treat it as, is she right? Because she's so obviously wrong. She's so hideously and violently wrong that even by treating it like a debate and saying, is she right? Who do you agree with? Kemi Badenoch or the people who don't want young boys to be growing up in thrall to it? I mean, even that gives, if you like, ammunition and fuel to the misogynists, to the apologists for misogyny, to the apologists for sexual abuse and for rape. So, I appreciate this is quite a big ask, but what is going through her mind? If I made you,
don't know.
Well, you're going to have to do better than that.
You know when you sit there and this wasn't a political issue. This shouldn't be a political issue. This shouldn't be an immigration issue. This is about, I watched the news last night, was it this morning, 200 rapes a day. This isn't a political issue. This is a everybody issue.
Yes.
And she made it political, and that upset me as a woman, as a survivor and as a woman. I don't know how other women feel, but for me, this isn't a political issue. This is, you should be standing up and saying, this isn't right. I mean, in America, we've got Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, one of the most venomous women, and even she's there going, this is not a political issue.
Yes.
This is about the safety of women and girls. And I cannot believe, when I heard Kemi Badenoch say that, I was devastated. But why have you made this political? You should be saying, okay, it's a start, but it doesn't go far enough. You know, as a woman, as a political figure, that's what she should have been saying. But instead, she brought it back round to immigration, which made me very, very sad, because there are women out there now in abusive relationships or who have been raped or sexually assaulted, who may be struggling with coming forward or getting help. And their perpetrators were white or a family member, and what, they don't count? Their feelings don't count?
And there are schoolgirls. There are schoolgirls in the foothills of these kind of experiences. And crucially, there are schoolboys who are in thrall to Andrew Tate and messages of misogyny, all of whom are still reachable, all of whom are still helpable, all of whom may go on to do things or suffer things that are preventable, and she doesn't want to put effort into preventing them. Is that, I mean, it's not enough, is it, to say that she's scoring political points? Because I can get my head around scoring political points, and I can get my head around people doing things that you might find difficult, or I might find a bit immoral, or a bit wrong, or dishonest, or deceitful, but they all do it. Even politicians you like sometimes will engage in behaviour that you think is suboptimal because they're trying to score political points over the opposition. But I can't quite extend it into this subject. I can't quite see how anyone can use this as a stick with which to beat, well, who?
If any social issue, guns, knives, it shouldn't be about scoring points. It should be about a societal problem, about the people, and trying to do the right thing to, you know, to address those problems. So my child's high school, I just want to say, to my child's high school, over a year ago, even before adolescence came out, I know because I have meetings about it with the head.
Yes.
They had already recognised that there was a problem with misogyny. They were already putting things in place to start tackling the issue, you know, within their school. And just this week, you know, they've had a dramatisation and a play, you know, for the boys only to go and watch. And they really, because their teacher, she said, you know, her teachers were coming and telling her, look, we're seeing things that the boys are perhaps doing, or even saying that perhaps they don't know is wrong because
yes,
it makes
that's
sense
the point.
In their
that,
home
that's
life.
That's the point. That is the point. And if it's not their home life, it might be their online life that is teaching them this is not bad behaviour, this is not wrong. You've led me to another statistic, Jane, and that is this one. Department of Education commissioned research found that 70% of secondary school teachers surveyed said their school had actively dealt with sexual violence and or harassment between children. 70% of secondary school teachers surveyed said that their school had actively dealt with it. You could probably nudge that figure up a bit to include the teachers who didn't even know that their school had dealt with it because it's not something that falls under their purview or their department. But if you want to take it at its absolute base level, it's 70%. And the leader of the Conservative Party doesn't think it needs addressing, doesn't think it's a problem, doesn't think it's something that the government should be concerned with, and thinks instead something-something, foreigners, something-something. Listen, I understand the siren lure of anti-immigrant rhetoric. I am something of an expert, at risk of sounding like Daddy Pig, on how easy it is to persuade people to blame somebody over there for problems that are caused by the person who is telling them to blame somebody over there. But I don't get this. I don't get this. And nor does Jane, except the inadequate explanation that it is just raw base politics. But who are the victims of the rawness and the baseness? Most obviously, the girls and women who will be abused, and to a lesser extent, but to me this is also really important, the boys who are caught up in this sort of hellscape of misogyny and misinformation. 10:32 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Vladimir Putin has claimed Russian forces will make more gains in Ukraine by the end of the year. He's been speaking at his year-end news conference in Moscow, hours after the EU agreed a 90 billion euro loan for Kiev. Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's reported a Chinese group was behind the hack. And the US Department of Justice is expected to release the so-called Epstein files later. It follows the publication of another batch of photographs from the paedophile financier's estate. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
When things don't go to plan, you need car insurance you can rely on. That's why at NFU Mutual, we pay out on 99% of car insurance claims with no quibble. And if you're hit by an at-fault, uninsured driver, your no-claims discount is protected. Conditions apply. We do this so you can enjoy the more important things. No wonder we're a Which? Recommended car insurance provider, January 2025. For quality car insurance you can rely on, join NFU Mutual today.
You know what I love about Eurostar? Being able to bring two suitcases and a hand luggage for free. That's why I've packed my entire wardrobe. Literally. I dismantle the flatpack. The nuts and bolts are in my briefcase.
I'm trading it for an aquarium. Oh, which reminds me, you can bring a lot of liquid on board too.
Eurostar, together we go further.
Luggage up to 85 centimetres, must fit in racks. Restrictions and charges apply. See Eurostar.com.
Come on, guys, we're late!
Mum, can I borrow your phone quickly?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
I know every year it's the same. The ones you love most you leave until last. I just struggle to put into words how much you mean to me. Your hugs feel different to everyone else's. Your words hit harder. Your brew tastes better. But how can I say all that?
This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis. Order by 12 p.m. on the 23rd to click and collect from John Lewis and Waitrose stores on Christmas Eve. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 10:35, so riddle me this. The statistics are staggering. The number of young men who are engaging in or admiring of misogynistic behaviour, up to and including sexual abuse and violence, is a national tragedy and also a national scandal. The government, some might argue belatedly, is moving to act in this space and moving quite seriously, moving quite significantly. And the leader of the opposition is complaining about it. And I can't begin to understand why. Here are some of the theories. So we can take Jane's, which is, I think, fairly self-explanatory. She is just engaging in footballification. Kemi Badenoch cannot help but. So the significant bit from the Telegraph line is not all schoolboys will be taught how to respect women and girls to stem the rise of misogyny and reduce sexual violence. The significant bit is the next five words, Sir Keir Starmer has announced. Therefore, it must be bad. Footballification taken to ignoring, downplaying or even denying the existence of massive problems involving misogyny and abuse of young women. Statistics off the top of my head. Roughly half of the men who were arrested outside the hotel in Epping during those protests against migrants, and one of whom is a sex offender, don't make any bones about that. More than half, I think roughly half of the men who were arrested there had come to the authorities' attentions previously for allegations of domestic violence. So talk to me about culture, which is what she seems to be doing. So point one, it is simply point scoring. Point two, and this is a pet subject, this is what would happen if you spent your whole life on Twitter. This is what I warned you about 18 months, 2 years ago. I can't believe the number of accounts. We've subsequently discovered that they're mostly coming from overseas. And, of course, Elon Musk has subsequently made it quite a lucrative business. The number of accounts that are dedicated entirely to pretending that, A, every foreigner is a sex offender, and B, every sex offender is foreign. If that is the world you're legislating for, then this is the sort of thing you would say. But it's so completely at odds with observable reality. And she, you almost have to double check this hasn't been written by Armando Iannucci. She's a former Women and Equalities Minister. So you've got terminally online, and you've got addicted to footballification. What else have you got? 0345 60 60 973. Just explain to me what you think is going on in the mind of this important and influential person. Osman's in Birmingham. Osman, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
So, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm a supply teacher in the UK. And I've come across, and I also worked in Thailand as well for a couple of years as a teacher.
Okay.
And I've come across different attitudes towards sexual education. In Thailand, they will, you know, educate about this from a very young age.
Really? But of course, because there are so many sex offenders coming there from here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about that as well, actually. I mean, in my time there, I came across, essentially what is sex tourism. Right? I mean, Thailand is known for that. But you know,
that is literally. Let me get the line right. That is literally. People coming from cultures that don't respect women coming into our country. If you were Thai, you would talk about people from cultures that don't respect women coming into our country. If you were Thai.
Oh, well, actually, I mean, sorry.
I hadn't thought of that angle. But anyway, nor would Kemi Badenoch. You carry on. I'll shut up for a while.
No, it's fine. So, when I was teaching health class in Thailand, there was a chapter dedicated towards teaching young boys, keep a certain distance, don't touch. This is how you behave around young girls. Mm. And there's a certain culture that they say, these are our traditional values. This is how you are supposed to respect women. And, I think that we are losing that gentlemanliness here in the UK. I think that you see it when it comes to music, and you see it when it comes to pornography and all these other kind of attitudes from young boys nowadays.
I don't argue with that. I mean, I'd be more likely to blame Andrew Tate than music, but, you know, it's a big net and it catches a lot of people in it. Can I nudge you, and it may not be something you want to do, but I'm going to try to insist, to explain to me what on earth you think is going on in the mind of Kemi Badenoch when she says none of this is necessary and it's all a distraction from foreigners?
Well, first of all, I think it's a little bit old school mentality, right? I mean, we've got a long-standing history of the Me Too movement here in the UK, as well as a sort of turn the other...
What was the other one? The one in schools, when schoolgirls were literally queuing up to tell us what was happening to them in their own classrooms. It was an offshoot of Me Too, but it had its own name. It was everyone's invited. Everyone's invited. It was set up by schoolgirls for schoolgirls to describe what was being done to them by schoolboys. How can a Women and Equalities Minister not know about that?
I mean, look, I've, as a teacher, one of the jobs that I did as a supply teacher in Birmingham was I had to escort a young boy. Obviously, I can't give any details, but I've had to escort a young boy who was accused of sexually assaulting a young girl in the toilets.
Oh,
right?
God.
He was not an immigrant. Right. This was a majority white school. This is in a shared, you know, a shared gendered toilet at all, you know. Not that that's. I don't want to get into that issue, but the problem of sexual assault is a domestic problem, right? We've had poor policing on it. We don't really talk about it. There has been a culture of look the other way, and that is something that I think the old school mentality of
going backwards to the days when it was a woman's fault if she got raped because she was wearing a miniskirt, or you'd describe people as asking for it, or you'd talk about jail bait, all these hideous sort of 1970s, 1980s positions that we felt we had moved on from. These people who congratulate themselves on being bold or visionary or original, they're basically just sort of, 1970s dinosaurs in fancy Rolexes and modern clothes, 1970s dinosaurs in Maseratis, pretending that they're making some meaningful insight when all they're really doing is going back to the values of backside pinching and it's a widespread sexual innuendo and worse. And yet here's Kemi Badenoch joining in, a young woman, an educated young woman. I think she's got sons. What is going on here? Katie's in Tunbridge Wells. Katie, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello, Katie.
Hi. Yeah, I am a teacher at secondary school. I'm also a single parent mother of a teenage son and daughter. I feel like we need to look at this a different way.
Mm.
So I agree, yes, we need to be educating our children, our sons in particular, about misogyny. But I feel that, frankly, a lot of this is a waste of time unless we ban mobile phones, which I know no government's ever going to be brave enough to do. But I really feel...
The Australian government has banned access to all social media platforms for under 16.
Yes.
So they have. They are brave enough to do it. And we watch with great interest to see what happens there. But it doesn't stop your son sending a picture of his privates to a girl in his class, does it? Oh, you mean banning the actual technology as well?
I think if we actually cared about our kids, and this is just one aspect of the destruction that is you know, has come our way on our young people. The reality is, I work in schools. Getting them to sit still in a classroom, you know, a whole class is hard enough.
Yes,
50% of the teacher's time is spent on behaviour issues.
I mean, at risk of accusing you of what you're accusing the children of, I am going to steer you back to focusing upon the lesson in hand at the moment, Katie, rather than going off piste with other issues and concerns, interesting and valid though they are. Why on earth would a woman of Kemi Badenoch's background and age and profession, a former Women and Equalities Minister, be arguing that we shouldn't be doing all of the things that you have concluded we are already not going far enough on?
Because she doesn't want to, well, if she ever gets in power, she doesn't want to ever tackle the big technology companies. No one wants to do anything that's going to upset the big money business people.
They don't want to bring in the laws. I don't think it's that in her case. I mean, it would be an answer. I'll put it on the list, but I don't think she's frightened, because really, in many ways, the scheme she's objecting to is teaching boys to be better, giving boys more chances to understand the wrongness of their behaviour. It's a side order, really, that demands that technology companies bar children from being able to take, share or view nude images using their phones. I mean, I obviously welcome both, but Badenoch's point of contention, her complaint was about the plan to teach boys to be better. That's the bit that she's focused on. Do you know, there's another possibility here. And if you're a certain type of personality and you do something and you feel shame, and then you put enormous amounts of effort into persuading yourself that you've got nothing to feel shame about. Don't laugh at me. I know what I'm talking about, because I used to be one of these people. And I suppose in some ways I always will be. It's to do with my background. It's to do with my schooling. It's to do with my childhood. The relationship with shame is a fascinating thing. Any therapist will tell you, talk to you for hours about shame, and it will be fascinating, and you'll learn things about yourself. But there's a certain type of character, very prominent in public life in this country, who puts extraordinary amounts of effort into pretending that they are immune to shame. You would, for example, claim that you never had to apologise for anything because you never committed gaffes. It's such an obviously ridiculous thing to say. The idea that you are essentially saying, no, I'm perfect. I never make mistakes. Because then every single time you make a mistake, there's more shame. So you have to work even harder to pretend that you're not ashamed. I mean, it explains an awful lot of behaviour of an awful lot of people, particularly in public life, but also quite possibly in your private life. So when the entire country was talking about that incredible piece of drama that continues to resonate around the world, Adolescence, Stephen Graham and Jack Thorne, who a recent guest on Full Disclosure, if you want to find out more about him and a bit about that show, that incredible show. Everybody, the world and his wife, the world and her husband, were talking about it. And it turned out that the former Women and Equalities Minister and the leader of the opposition hadn't even seen it. And if you're dealing with the shame of having put yourself that gaffe, if you're dealing with the shame of having put yourself in that position, then have a little reminder of what she said to Nick on LBC back in April.
I haven't watched it. I don't have time to watch anything these days, to be honest. But I have read about
it. The Prime Minister had time to watch it, Mrs. Bader.
Yes, well, they have. And so what I understand is that this is a fictional representation of a story that is actually quite different. I'm not going to watch every single thing that everybody's watching on Netflix. I do know what they're watching, and I know what it's about. And I've given a view that it is a work of fiction that is interesting, that touches on a problem in society. But there are bigger problems, such as Islamic terrorism and that kind of radicalization. And the story which it is based on has been fundamentally changed. And so creating policy on a work of fiction rather than on reality is the real issue.
I'm pretty sure that Stephen Graham and Jack Thorne have challenged that last bit of what she said. But maybe that is designed to appeal to online racists as well. I don't know. And she started saying Islamic terrorism. I noticed this in PMQs on Wednesday, as opposed to Islamist, as if she's trying to put all Muslims on the hook for the kind of atrocities that we saw in Australia this week. Again, it could be a slip of a tongue, but one kind of doubts it. And that shame, that ridiculous position that she found herself in, of being a former Women and Equalities Minister who hadn't even bothered to watch one of the, I mean, universally accepted, effective clarion calls against misogyny, perhaps explains how she's still digging. And it's actually a human explanation. It's not political or philosophical. It's pathetic, tragic. But she's just still digging. I jumped in a hole back in April, when I was too busy playing Candy Crush to watch the programme that everybody was talking about. And as a former Women and Equalities Minister, obviously I should have watched it before everybody else. But I dug a hole then, and I'm not prepared to admit that I made a mistake, because I'm Kemi Badenoch and I never do gaffes. So I'm still digging now. And that means that yesterday I attacked plans from the government to teach boys things that will make them less likely to commit violence against women and young girls. It's 10 to 11.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £26 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Whoa. Oh, should have stretched first. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:52 is the time. Listen, it's a genuine inquiry into how anybody, let alone the leader of the opposition and a former Women and Equalities Minister, could respond to proposals to teach schoolboys to respect women and girls more, to stem the rise in misogyny, to reduce sexual violence in a country or against a backdrop where almost half of our young men have a positive attitude towards the ridiculous misogynist, but also dangerous misogynist Andrew Tate. And Kemi Badenoch thinks it's all a waste of time. Why is she doing this? Where does this come from? What motivates her at these moments? Clarify one thing. I can't find the stats that are specific to the protest in Epping, but 2 in 5 of the men arrested during the Farage riots last summer, you'll remember those, prompted in part by him relying upon that vile misogynist Andrew Tate for his news. 2 out of every 5 people arrested after participating in the Farage riots had previously been reported to the police for domestic abuse. Now, there is a case, and I hesitate to make it, to argue that Badenoch is appealing to those men. when she says they don't need any help understanding the dangers of violence against women. It's all about the foreigners. It's all about the immigrants. 2 out of every 5 people arrested after participating in the Farage riots last summer had been previously reported to the police for domestic abuse. But the real problem here is, let me get the quote right, the efforts to halt misogyny should instead focus on immigration from cultures that don't respect women. That's the world that she inhabits. A world where she either doesn't know or doesn't care that the massive majority of victims of child sexual abuse know their offender, that nearly half of our young people admire Andrew Tate, that 70% of teachers, 70% of secondary school teachers report that their school had actively dealt with sexual violence and or harassment between children. That's all going on. And she thinks that we shouldn't focus on that. We should focus on immigration from cultures that don't respect women. What on earth is wrong with her? Martina is in Axminster. Martina, what would you like to say?
Hi, this is the first time I'm calling in. Your show is absolutely brilliant, but this has got me so angry.
Go on.
I think it's verbal rage bait. I think what she's doing is appealing to a certain part of the population who completely agree with her. They're jumping on a bandwagon, which is let's blame all Muslims for anything that goes wrong in the country, regardless of where they come from or any kind of background. Quickly, I'm shaking.
Take it easy. You've got all the time you want.
And I think that this is every single time she opens her mouth to say something, it's always, it incurs some kind of rage, let's say from the more left side of political views, but the right, everybody's saying, oh yeah, she's right, she's absolutely right.
Are they? I mean, how can they? How can they when these numbers, I mean, that's why I went in with the Daily Telegraph's coverage of yesterday's announcement, because they are, I mean, forgive me, it's my late father's old newspaper, but they're absolutely mad now at the Daily Telegraph. Not so much on the news pages, but everywhere else. And even they wrote it up as an unalloyed good. In fact, they got involved. They wrote, the Telegraph earlier this month revealed government-backed research which found 15% of teenagers who were in relationships had suffered abuse. It's all there. It's just known. And yet she is flying in exactly the opposite direction.
But I think it's pretty obvious that facts don't matter to a certain percentage. It doesn't matter how much research you throw or how much information which has been validated by facts and statistics and everything else. For the leader of the Conservative Party to stand up and dismiss all those facts. That's what she did.
Well, to dismiss almost every victim of violence and sexual abuse in this country. No one's pretending that these crimes aren't also committed by people from overseas, regardless of how they came here. But the massive, massive, the uncountable majority of women and girls who've suffered from these sort of crimes will be the victims of either people that they know or people from the same background as them.
And everything has been invalidated in one sentence, but anybody who's listening to that will pick out the choice words which they want. It's not our fault. It's not the fault of our young boys. It's the fault of those brown-skinned people who have come over here on boats. Everybody's lumped in, aren't they? Everybody is literally lumped into one easy bracket. If you like.
And that is, like. I mean, and we don't know how effective this is because we don't spend our lives on Twitter. She hasn't got time to watch adolescents, but she's presumably doing 6 or 7 hours a day on socials because that is the only place, the post Elon Musk Twitter is the only place where these racist lies go unchallenged. But
Adolescence was a television series that was put out in schools. That's how important that program was. I don't have kids, but I watched it because it's important to know about these things. She dumbs herself that, well, maybe she is that dumb, but she makes herself even more stupid by some of the things that she's saying. But it appeals to that ignorant part of the world, part of England anyway, you know, part of Great Britain who just are jumping on the thing going, oh, yes, it's not our fault. It's not our fault.
And that gives carte blanche to the kind of man who turned out at the Farage riots despite having domestic abuse allegations on their own records. No wonder they're so keen to pretend that this is all a problem caused by brown men, by immigrant men. I mean,
facts don't matter. Facts don't matter. And
It's like, so on a light, I don't want to say on a lighter note, but it's a bit like saying they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. It's appealing to the same impulse of when Donald Trump claimed that all the Haitians...
There's no interest in actual facts. There's no interest in truth. There's no interest in anything else. And Kemi Badenoch is Badenoch, however you pronounce it, is on a hiding to nothing at the moment with her party. So every single time she comes out with these shocking things, and it was shocking what she said, it's got mass ignorance appeal.
And it'll probably get loads of likes on Twitter, regardless of how many of those are coming from actual human beings or actual British voters or actual real people. Who knows? And Jenrick will join in. Jenrick will do something else. And you can count the crimes committed by foreign-born people or by people who've come here via irregular routes or by illegal immigrants, whatever language you prefer. You can count those crimes and you can be very dismayed and disgusted by the number, as you should be. But you must, by definition, be more disgusted by the bigger numbers. And yet Kemi Badenoch seems to be speaking to people who don't want to be, or who refuse to be, or who genuinely aren't. It's as if we will protect our women and girls from foreign men, but not, God forbid, from each other.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, it's claimed a Chinese hacking group was behind a data breach at the Foreign Office. The gang reportedly targeted government servers in October, accessing information related to visa applications. The Trade Minister, Sir Chris Bryant, says he is pretty confident applicants' details are safe. He's warned some of the reports are not necessarily accurate.
We managed to close the hole, as it were, very quickly. It was a technical issue in one of our sites, I gather. I don't want to scaremonger about this. We are on top of it. And also, it's not entirely clear where this has come from. I know everybody's speculating about that as well. That is not entirely clear either.
President Putin has claimed Russian forces will make more gains in Ukraine by the end of the year. He's been speaking at his year-end news conference, hours after the EU agreed to a 90 billion euro loan for Kiev. Mr. Putin's accused Ukraine of refusing to end the conflict. LBC has learned a target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. It's the UK's biggest cause of death among children under five. LBC's Helen Hoddinott has more details.
In 2017, the Tories set a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter by the end of this year, a reduction of around 15,000 preterm births a year. That target's been missed, and the government hasn't set a new one, despite the rate slightly increasing. Fiona had five premature births, resulting in lifelong medical conditions for her children, and feels it's an oversight by the government.
It shows such a lack of understanding of the real cost of prematurity. I think that they could have had so much easier lives.
The Department of Health says it's determined to transform maternity and neonatal services.
Official figures show there was higher than expected government borrowing in November. It stood at £11.7 billion last month, more than forecast, but nearly £2 billion less than a year earlier. And Washington DC's Kennedy Center has been given a new name, the Trump Kennedy Center. The White House says it reflects Donald Trump's unbelievable work to help save the 1970s performing arts venue. John F. Kennedy's niece has suggested Mr. Trump also looks at renaming the Lincoln Memorial. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 98.43. That's up 5. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, get 12 bottles of Birra Moretti for just £12. Down from £17.50 with your Tesco club card. Tesco, every little helps. Drinkware 18 plus. Majority of larger stores ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 11 is the time. Would you like to play a missing word round? You know how rubbish we are at kind of being grown-ups on this programme. What we should have done, and I'm looking at you, what we should have done is put together a kind of what was the best unhinged headline of the year, and what was the best missed information of the year, and what was the best woke watch of the year. But we haven't, because I only had the idea at 2 minutes to ten this morning, so there's absolutely no chance whatsoever of that. Next year, kids, we'll be millionaires. Next year, we'll get it together. We're going to start a database. We said this last year. In fact, I think we said it on my last show of last year. We said, you know, we did, didn't we, Keith? I'm not imagining it. We said, don't look at me like that. You were supposed to start the database. We're going to start a database. Did we actually start one? Did we start a database of, is it called James's Brilliant Ideas? I've actually got a folder. You think I'm exaggerating. I've got a folder and it says on it, James O'Brien folder, please don't bin, brackets, even if you're James, close brackets. Because there were many occasions in the course of the last year where my folder of interesting things would find its way into the bin because I used to leave the studio in such a flourish. I'd drop all my papers in the bin and the folder would go with it. It's a metaphor for something, isn't it? I don't know what. Life? This programme? Anyway, we haven't got a database, so we haven't got any end of year hilarity or fun, and good, because it's not the end of the year for you. I break up today, but you quite probably don't. Nick will be here on Monday, in his usual slot. Lewis Goodall will be in mine. But anyway, I've got a good, all of that is a very roundabout way of saying we're about to do a little bit of retrospection, and I've got a rather good missing word round for you. At least I think it's rather good. Are you ready for this? Blank row threatens £25 million stately home plan. Blank row threatens £25 million stately home plan. I just need to have a quick word with Keith, if that's all right with you. Do you remember when I launched the missing word round and I accidentally said the missing word in the thing? What was the word? Oh, yeah. No, for a moment I thought it was actually this word. I thought we'd found another missing word round with the same missing word as the first missing word round. But that was cauliflower. That is not the answer to this one. Blank, right, and don't think that's a clue. Don't go, oh, I bet it's cabbage then, because it's not. Or Cavolo Nero, if you're posh. It's not. It's completely different. Blank row threatens £25 million stately home plan. Get yourself stuck into that if you can, and I will do my level best to remember to... I've got better at that this year, haven't I? I've got better at giving the answer to the question that I posed. I'm still not perfect. Nobody's perfect, except Kemi Badenoch. But I have got better at that. So, there were two things that occurred to me for this hour. In the next hour, we're going to build a radio phone-in about one of the only authors in the world who I am fairly confident I've read every single word they've ever written. This is a living author who's written a lot of books. If it was a dead author who'd only written one, this wouldn't be a very impressive boast, would it? A living author who's written loads of books, and I think I've read every single word they've ever written. We've also got Andy Hughes joining us in about 40 minutes with a tale of festive cheer and carol concerts. You're going to love it. Or possibly a tale of tragically hilarious Christian nationalism on the rise in the UK. It's up to you to decide. But this hour, I want to look at what I think is the biggest story of the year. But I'm also interested to know what you think is the biggest story of the year. So I've got three contenders, two very much from the deep end and one very much from the shallow end. But the one in the shallow end speaks very clearly of social change, something that the curious cocktail of technology and humanity throwing up something that is very much of the age, very zeitgeisty, very much of our moment. So I'm putting that on the right-hand column. The two stories that I think are of profound significance internationally, both perhaps inevitably, happened in the United States of America, what you might call the game changers, one of which I just asked a couple of colleagues yesterday, and it was notable how quickly and how confidently everybody gave exactly the same answer. And you listen to this show enough to know that I kind of dance around the houses a little bit, and arguably more so as I get older. The days of what does Yeats call it in that wonderful poem? What does Yeats call it? The worst are full of passionate convict. No, the worst are full of certainty. While the best lack all conviction, the worst. So I used to be full of passionate, is it passionate certainty? I used to be full of passionate certainty, and now I lack all conviction. But my colleagues, my younger colleagues in particular, in answer to the question, what was the biggest story of the year? They were all full of passionate intensity. And the answer was Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to the Oval Office, when he was humiliated and abused in the most extraordinary fashion by Donald Trump and his ludicrous acolytes. I don't think anybody saw it coming, and I don't think anybody was capable in that moment of processing it properly. I also put the killing of Charlie Kirk on the list of things that had a sort of international resonance, the like of which I don't think anybody fully expected or maybe even understood. You know, the way that Donald Trump has spoken recently about the murder of Rob Reiner, the film director, and his wife Michelle Singer Reiner, makes something of a mockery of all of the pearl clutching and holier-than-thou posturing undertaken by his admirers and directed at people who were perceived as not having been sufficiently respectful of Charlie Kirk when he died, up to and including, of course, people who took a sort of avalanche of abuse for sharing what he said. That's the bit I found weirdest about Charlie Kirk's killing, was the way that it became offensive to tell people the things that he had said. To even play clips of Charlie Kirk was offensive to his memory. There's something in that that I thought was almost unfeasibly of the moment. The idea that somebody being lionized and championed as a defender of free speech by people would see exactly the same people outraged and offended, or claiming to be outraged and offended, if they were reminded of the words that the bloke they loved for exercising free speech actually said while exercising free speech. It's quite a breathtaking moment, actually. It's why dystopian novels are not very easy to write, because to get that absolute nugget of weapons-grade hypocrisy and to make it plausible is almost impossible to do. That's why some of those novels stand the test of time in ways that other novels don't. And oddly enough, Donald Trump yesterday, speaking of dystopian novels, appeared to announce his own Hunger Games, which I remember saying to you during his first term would probably be next. He'll probably announce a Hunger Games at some point, and now he has, but I digress. So you've got Volodymyr Zelensky in the Oval Office, and you've got the assassination, the murder of Charlie Kirk. And then in the shallow end, for me at least, you've got the so-called Coldplay couple, one of whom has given an interview which makes it clear, A, that she and the colleague that she was in a sort of clinch with had already both broken up with their partners. And listen, I mean, it's not beyond all possibility that that isn't true and that she's lying, but I would be absolutely staggered given the scrutiny and the glare of attention that is already focused on them and will be focused upon this interview that she's given. I would be absolutely gobsmacked if she were not telling the truth. What they were worried about was the fact that she's head of HR and he's the CEO, and her husband was in the crowd at that gig with a date. They were recently separated, and he was going on his first date and didn't know that she was potentially embarking on a relationship with her boss. And that, according to her account, was the first time that they'd ever cuddled or hugged. So that way, not the story, the story's boring, but the scale of the response, the absolutely incredible fallout, which reached parts that other stories, other scandals simply cannot reach. Millions, if not billions, of views. Absolutely universal mockery. She received more than 60 death threats, she reveals in this. People would shout adulterer at her in the street. She'd be mocked on chat shows. She'd spent months being ridiculed. And I don't really understand why. I still don't really understand what happened in the case of that story. So there are three there. the Coldplay kiss cam in the shallow end, and then Volodymyr Zelensky in the Oval Office, and Charlie Kirk being assassinated, very much being at the deep end. And we'll start, shall we, with the Oval Office one. And you're also welcome this hour to put your own nominations on the list, but I think you're going to struggle to tell me why mocking the leader of Ukraine, insulting the leader of Ukraine, humiliating the leader of Ukraine in the context of the post-war settlement, in the context of European peace, in the context of international relations, was not the most significant moment of the year in terms of the impact it has, the ripples of that rock being tossed into the pond and the places that they reach. But I want you to put it into words, if you can. So submit your own suggestions. You can do it on the phones if you want. I don't know if we can get all three up and running at the same time. I think we'll start with the Oval Office. Here's a little reminder of what happened.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country, that's backed you far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once?
Even today,
you went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
So, in your own words, what happened in the Oval Office that day? I'd love you to draw upon more history than I've got, a better grasp of history than I've got, perhaps. We've done a little bit of psychological analysis of Donald Trump again lately. We've resisted the temptation for quite a long time because it can be quite unsatisfying. But I don't think anybody saw that coming. It was one of the most shocking moments in terms of things that are not stone-cold tragedies or hideous crimes. Do you see what I mean? So, you know, it's not a terrorist atrocity or an assassination. Nobody died. No blood was spilt. But I don't think anybody could conceive in the moments before that happened of what was going to happen. And because we could not conceive in the moments before it happened of what was going to happen, it wasn't immediately processable. I just remember feeling this bizarre mixture of shock and horror, but also an air of disbelief, almost as if I was expecting them to sort of go, ha, 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 so got ya. Do you know what, does that sound mad? That it was so hideous and so completely, what's the word that I want? There's a wonderful word that describes sounds that are not, is it dissonant? Is that the word? It was so dissonant. It was so at odds with expectation and normality that you almost couldn't quite process it, you know? Like, I don't know, like seeing your dad on a date or something like that, if you thought that he was at the football with his mates, but he was cheating on your mum. For the record, that never happened to me. But that's just something so... Or seeing a teacher outside school, like realising that teachers are human beings. So something really dissonant that meant it was really difficult to process. And I want to return to the business, or the process of processing. In your own words, what happened that day in the Oval Office? 0345 6060 973. And if you need help, I don't know that you will. Phone lines are open. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. But what did Trump do? And why did he do it? Because I would still struggle to put huge amounts of flesh on those particular bones. There's a wonderful selection of adjectives that you can deploy. Blindsiding, jaw-dropping, unimaginable. I think these were just in some of the headlines. As a tribute to the late Rob Reiner, inconceivable. It's a bit niche, but rather nice, I think you'd agree. What happened in the Oval Office that day? And why discordance, another good word. Thank you, Elise. Maybe that's the one I was looking for. What happened in the Oval Office that day, and why did Donald Trump do it? Also, now that we've had plenty of time for the dust to settle, it was planned, wasn't it? They had a conversation before it happened about what they were going to do. It's possible even that other guy, Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend, was put up to the business of pointing out that he wasn't wearing a suit. And somebody else in that room would have said, no, he doesn't wear a suit because he's showing solidarity with the people that are actually risking their lives on the front line. Yeah, but we can ignore that. We can ask him why he's not wearing a suit and pretend that it's being disrespectful to us. There's no way that happened organically or randomly. That little weirdo Vance just sort of rubbing his thighs with glee at being able to abuse a proper stone-cold bona fide hero. Why did they do that? Why did they do that? I still don't really know. The war's still going on. 0345 6060 973. What did he do? What did they do? And why did they do it? Why did they do it? All right, hit the numbers now, you will get through. It's 11:18.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £26 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
What? Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favorite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the Cosmetics Company store, and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 11 is the time. It's a really interesting thing when you think about it, in that we can probably all agree that in the context of world peace, let alone world politics, the biggest thing going on at the moment is war in Europe. The biggest threat to our way of life is Vladimir Putin. And the biggest shock to our collective system occurred when the so-called leader of the free world attacked the leader of Ukraine in a mob with his mates in the actual Oval Office on live television in front of the entire world. So I think there is a consensus on the significance of the moment. I was struck yesterday by the speed and the confidence with which my colleagues all said Oval Office, Oval Office, Oval Office, Oval Office. And the more I thought about it afterwards, the more I realised that there really weren't any other contenders in the year for the story with the most heft, the story with the most moment. But I still don't know how easy it is for you to tell me what happened. Apart from, you know, the play-by-play commentary. And then he did this and then he did that. But in terms of the subtext, the agenda, what actually happened? It's the same question in a way. What happened and why did they do it? Because of all the things that have happened in the world in these years of extraordinary division and polarity, with a few exceptions, obviously, but almost everybody was on the same side on this. You know, people who recognised Boris Johnson for the absolute wombat that he is were happily and sincerely applauding him for offering undiluted support to Volodymyr Zelensky. There was very, very, I mean, certainly in Europe, you had Germany, everyone was in lockstep with each other. And then Trump decided to attack the leader of our ally. Why? Why did he do it? And what exactly happened that day? I'm still not clear on either of those questions. Angus is in Bethnal Green. Angus, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Let me wish you and your family all the best for 2026 and have a wonderful, relaxing Christmas.
You're very kind. Let's hope we make it, Angus.
We scratch our heads and wonder, don't we? Perhaps they thought that they were auditioning and hoping that David Chase, the genius that came up with The Sopranos, would be making a follow-up. Because the behaviour was like an amalgamation of a lot of episodes of The Sopranos.
Exaggerate the viciousness of it, can you? You're right. I mean, it was, I think, more
like a mob boss.
Joe Pesci,
I mean,
and Goodfellas.
One removed from a mob boss. I mean, he's
but what
vile.
Was the purpose? Because if I'm watching Goodfellas, or if I'm watching Sopranos, or if I'm watching The Godfather, the violence always has a really obvious purpose. That, you know, if you, whether you're hitting someone around the head of the back of the head with a baseball bat, or whether Luca Brasi is swimming with the fishes, we know why. We know why that is happening. So you're going to have to work a bit harder on your mafioso analogy.
Well, I mean, you have to remember that Trump's lawyer, his father's lawyer, Cohen, was a mob lawyer.
I'm buying the mafia parallels, but I'm not clear on what the purpose of it was.
Just to massage Trump's ego. He's a pathetic little human being. He's like a child.
There's got to be more to it than that.
I don't think there is. I don't think he's that deep. I think he just likes the attention.
But they could have. I mean, Zelensky could have bent the knee. Zelensky could have described him as the finest leader in the. I mean, we've seen what we did. We've seen what Starmer did. What King Charles was.
We don't have any backbone. We're not fighting for the survival of our own country, which Zelensky is. I know they've got problems over there, but his people's lives are on the line. And then you have this person that avoids the draft with dubious bone spurs arguments.
So they did it because they can. He did it because he can.
Yes, and
there's got to be more to it than that, because they didn't do it with anybody else. They didn't even do it with the bloke, with the bone saw bloke from Saudi Arabia. It was such an odd person to choose to brutalise and bully
him.
He
can give Trump lots of money.
Yeah.
And his gaudy palaces appeal to Trump, so his family's going to benefit massively from it.
What did you feel when you saw it? Because I think that's a really interesting question.
Sick to the bottom of my stomach. I thought, how. A, can they be supposedly our closest ally, which obviously they're not?
Yeah.
What motivates someone to behave like that? You know, get to the highest office in the land, in his country, and then behave like...
What I'm asking you. But yeah, I mean, it is. It does leave you with a very, very sour taste, but for me at least, with lots of questions as well. And do you know, the idea that we overthink this stuff is more and more persuasive every day. I don't even know if you know the things he's done in the last 24, 36, 48 hours. If someone said to you, he's replaced all the plaques on the portraits of the presidents... with insults for his predecessors that he doesn't like, and with a ridiculous hagiography for himself, you'd think, I'd be fascinated to plot a graph, wouldn't it? At the point at which you thought that became plausible. So when he first became president, and some of us were telling you exactly what was going to happen, and other people were saying, oh, Trump derangement syndrome, you'd have gone, no, don't be daft. No one's that pathetic and childish. But now he's chopped down the East Wing, he's knocked down the East Wing. You're thinking to yourself, would he do that? Would he rewrite the plaques on the presidential portraits to slag off Barack Obama and Joe Biden and to describe himself as a cross between Babe Ruth and the Messiah? Yeah, he would, wouldn't he? Well, spoiler alert, he has. And then the other bit is the Kennedy Center, the sort of hub of the arts in Washington, D.C., is to be renamed the Kennedy Trump Center. Again, if the late-night hosts had done that, beginning of the second term, beginning of the first term, it would have been a joke. It's like when I said to you, as a joke, he'll turn up in a military uniform next. As a joke. I don't know if it's a joke anymore or indeed a prediction. Anyway, lots more calls to get through. Simon Marks will be with us after the 12:30 news with his, and in person as well. I think is he coming in a Santa suit? Did he get the memo? I think he's coming dressed as an elf. Richard is in Reigate. Richard, what would you like to say?
James, thanks for keeping us sane.
Right, you say that. I get that. You see, Richard, I get that a lot, but you can't prove to me that I have. You might be as mad as Kemi Badenoch, mate, or the Daily Telegraph comment pages.
I might well. Carry on. It's revenge, isn't it? It's revenge, pure and simple. Because the first he the call to Zelensky, remember that perfect call in his first term? We all got the recording, and he tried to persuade Zelensky just to say he'd opened an investigation into Hunter Biden.
That's all he had to say, wasn't it?
That's all he had to say, and it got him impeached. It's revenge.
Some of these words are really scary, because you obviously pay attention, and I allegedly do this for a living, and I just thought, I'd just double-check he did actually get impeached. But, I mean, here is a headline that contains all of the information that you need. Trump tried to extort Zelensky and was impeached. That's it. That's the headline. And then you can write the next line if you want. Now he may succeed is the headline that David Smith, the Guardian's Washington correspondent, wrote under 9 months ago. But Trump tried to extort Zelensky and was impeached. And if he'd written it a few months earlier, you could say, and then America elected him again.
America elected him again. That's the amazing bit. So he got impeached the second time, didn't he? For trying to take over the Capitol and subvert a free and fair election, and they elected him again.
In the course of this one phone call, President Trump implicated himself by saying that Ukraine would have to do him a favour in order to get access to the congressionally appropriated $400 million and a meeting. This is in Alexander Weinmann's book, The Folly of Realism, How the West Deceived Itself About Russia and Betrayed Ukraine. How much that rhymes with what's going on this Friday with President Zelensky coming in and another kind of shakedown for billions of dollars in order to continue to receive support. So it was retrospective revenge and forward-moving extortion. How did you react to it at the time? What did you think at the time?
What, the call to...
No, the Oval Office mugging.
I was shocked. I was completely shocked. I mean, I've followed this very closely, and, you know, I'm more than as good for my sanity, really, but I was shocked. I didn't think such a thing could happen in the Oval Office.
Even though you can make sense of it, I think I'm a bit like you. And all of these elements, I think the retribution element may well actually be the biggest. But it's funny, isn't it? I don't know if there's a German word for being able to make sense of something but still not understand it. Or still not believe it. You know that it's true, but you still can't quite believe it. It's coming up to, it's just gone 11:30. Simon Marks will be with us next, but the conversation will be staying on very similar territory, perhaps with a few little additions to that list of unbelievable things that have happened in the last 24, 48 hours. Thomas Watts, meanwhile, has your headlines.
The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has thanked European leaders after they agreed a huge interest-free loan for Kyiv. They struck a deal overnight for a 90 billion euro payment. It'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. Thousands of documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's been reported a Chinese group was behind the attack, but ministers say it's still not clear who is to blame. Government borrowing fell to its lowest November level for 4 years last month, but the figure, £11.7 billion, was still higher than forecast. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the driest conditions in the south and east, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Are you ready to go electric? With a complete lineup of rewired iconic cars, including the all-electric Capri, Explorer, Puma Jenny and Mustang Mach-E. Buy before the end of December and you can get a free home charger, up to 10,000 charging miles, and 5 years free service plan. Go electric with Ford. Book your Ford test drive today. T's and C's apply. For more information, search Ford Power Promise.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Same.
Ho, ho, ho!
Same.
3, 2, 1, hey!
Same.
Whoa. Thanks.
Same.
What does Santa call his dog?
Same. Same.
One word. Free syllables.
Same. Same.
Sorry, it's a bit dry.
New plates.
Ooh. Ooh.
Treat your table to something different this Christmas. Visit your local IKEA now. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Macy, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
33 minutes after 11. Did I say Simon Marks was joining me after the news? Well, yeah, that was correct, but after the 12:30 news, obviously. I can't believe you didn't realise that when I said a few minutes ago he was joining us after the news, and then the news happened. But it's not that news, it's the other news. The news that's coming up at half past 12, and it will be Simon Marks. And he won't be dressed as an elf either, so fake news. It's still fascinating to me. The events in the Oval Office earlier this year that saw a man almost universally admired and supported by the civilised world, actually civilised is a bit of an anachronism, isn't it, but by the West, if you like, by an incredible, probably the most uniting force that Europe has seen since 1945. I mean, just an extraordinary moment. The welcoming offered to Ukrainian refugees, the support offered to Ukrainian repulsion of the illegal invasion by Vladimir Putin, everywhere you turned. We didn't do enough, don't make any mistakes about that. We still haven't done enough. We're moving too slowly, too sluggishly, almost entirely because Europe, indeed the rest of NATO, just is conditioned to expect the United States to lead and to do the most. They've always wanted to. They've always insisted that they would, so we've always let them. And now, of course, they won't. That's part of the bigger picture, but we still don't know why. Why did he do it? Is it just retribution? Is it just revenge? Why did they brutalise Volodymyr Zelensky in the White House? We haven't really moved on to either of the other two stories, but it's up to you and your appetites. If there's another story you think that is a contender for the crown, if you like, of the most significant moment of the year, then do feel free to tell me. But meanwhile, we'll crack on with this. Mark's in Stanmore. Mark, what do you reckon?
Well, today we can listen to what Trump is saying about his vision of New World Order, and then suddenly you go, oh my God.
Oh, yes.
He's walked into a meeting thinking that it's about one thing, and it's going, Zelensky, you don't get it, right? You're not part of the New World Order. You're not one of the mighty powers, America or Russia or China. You're one of the victims. So, you know, eat your humble pie, and let's see, you know, what's left afterwards, because, quite frankly, you're not important to our colonial interests, Russia's colonial interests. And there's money to be made out of things in your country. Yeah, we'll split that up between us because this is the new Make America Great. It's
we'll help ourselves. So, there's not a single answer to this question, is there? Because you're not suggesting for a minute that it had nothing to do with retribution or a sort of punishment beating for refusing to be extorted during Trump's first term. But you're referring, I think, to the national security statement and the knowledge that he kind of envisions a G5. He can see a table around which Russia has a seat and historic European allies do not. China and India welcomed back in from various degrees of diplomatic cold. And the only measure for heft and status and a Trump worldview is power and money, regardless of war crimes and other concerns.
It's kind of interesting, and no doubt Trump was irritated. Trump has brought public the things that we suspected happened behind the scenes, which is, it's behind the curtain of the Wizard of Oz.
I don't know how naive I'll sound now, but I don't believe that things were ever as venal or as craven as Trump is. I think they were imperfect and borderline corrupt, and corrupt on occasion, but they were never this venal. They were never this personal. They might have acted corruptly in pursuit of what they saw as American interests, but this is why I like the mafia line. This is the family. This is him, and him alone benefiting from things. Not America.
And President Putin having people put to death who yes. cross him.
Yes.
the thing is, Trump is humiliating people.
Perhaps that's a need, isn't it? That's a psychological thirst that he has. They're born presumably of massive insecurity or massive something. What I do not know, and yet to do that, and the world, I'm looking at it through the lens of the world's reaction, knowing how the world would react and wanting the world to be disgusted, wanting the world to be outraged, because as Mark suggests, there's a new world order on the way, and there's no room in it for... .. 11:38 is the time. Thank you, Mark. Dan's next. Before that, I mean, it's not even a true or false game. This is the plaque that Donald Trump has stuck under Barack Obama's portrait in the White House. Barack Hussein Obama was the first black president, a community organizer, one-term senator from Illinois, and one of the most divisive political figures in American history. As president, he passed the highly ineffective, quotes, unaffordable, end quotes, CARE Act, resulting in his party losing control of both houses of Congress and the election of the largest House Republican majority since 1946. He presided over a stagnant economy, approved the terrible Iran nuclear deal, and signed the one-sided Paris Climate Accords, both of which were later terminated by President Donald J. Trump. It's hard to come up with fully workable analogies, isn't it? What's the guy in Family Guy? What's that? It's not my go-to cartoon of choice, but Peter, what's his name? Peter Griffin. Is it a bit Peter Griffin, this, or is that unfair on Peter Griffin? It's as if a 6 or 7 year old child has been allowed to remake the world in his own image. So I am the king. Imagine the most spoiled child on the planet appoints himself. He's at school, so he appoints himself head boy at the school. And then he goes with a felt-tip pen to the honours board where all the other head boys are commemorated and remembered. And he writes things like smelly, stinky bum, bad breath. And that's essentially what he's doing. The Joe Biden one is worse. Sleepy Joe Biden, this is in the actual White House, was by far the worst president in American history. And then he tells lies about the election that Joe Biden won. He's still lying about that. But remember, if you find any of this shocking, remarkable or unpleasant, then you are suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Dan's in Croydon. Dan, what's going on?
Hi, James. Hello, back mate. To the original point. Yes. I don't think it was actually scripted.
Do you not?
I think... No, I don't. I've watched it again and again and again, and I don't think... Not that I'm particularly invested in this topic, but I really am. I think there was a lot of hostility there anyway, because
sure.
Zelensky was there asking for things that Trump doesn't want to give him. He doesn't like him. He has got a background with that country, and it's not a positive one. So there was a problem there.
That's all that matters. These are the things that, for, you know, quite enthusiastic current affairs watchers, the things that are hardest to process are the things that are newest. So even if you had personal prejudices, even if you had personal positions, personal opinions, the worst political leaders in history would not allow them to completely cloud out the national interest or the bigger picture or the public reaction or whatever it was. But with Trump, it really doesn't matter. All that matters is his personal animus, his personal impulse. So you're either joining in with it or you're repulsed by it.
Well, exactly. So he knew that the spotlight of the world was on this visit. It was very important. So for a few moments, there had to be a thin veneer of normalcy in the Oval Office. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene's hand puppet asked that awful question about his suit.
Suit,
and
yes.
that kind of tip, that kind of tipped the scales. And then all of a sudden, DJ Vance and Pete Hesketh saw an opportunity to just be a set of attack dogs to make Daddy happy. And they always say, never watch the execution, watch the crowd. So I watched.
Wow, do they? I've never heard that before. It's a brilliant line.
They always say, and I watched Trump's face, and he was in ecstasy watching Zelensky being mauled by his little boys, his attack dogs,
wow.
Because that's what he wanted. He wanted the man to be publicly humiliated. He wanted him to be destroyed, because he didn't want to give him anything anyway. He doesn't want him. He hates him. And all of a sudden, DJ Vance, who will do anything to make him happy, and Pete...
Jay, you're not saying DJ is a joke. It's JD, right?
Oh, sorry.
No, I thought that was a joke I didn't get, so I left it. I let it pass the first time. I thought, I've got to keep up. I don't know this joke. He's cleverer than me, old Dan. No, J.D. Vance. Vance.
It's just the excitement of talking to you at Christmas time.
They were, you're right. They were just trying to keep Daddy happy.
Yeah, and the two dress-up characters, because they like dressing up in military uniforms, don't they, with their warrior ethos, they saw an opportunity to make themselves look better and stronger and harder in front of their father figure, and they just seized upon it, and Trump just lay back and bathed in the glory. He just absolutely adored the experience.
And it was hideous. It was hideous to everybody else.
It really
and even to Trump admirers, these would be the moments where they close their eyes and put their fingers in their ears. I don't know what you would describe them as, the sort of redeemable ones, if that's such a thing. There'll be plenty of people who, within a week, were still shouting Trump derangement syndrome at everybody telling the truth, but who did find that unbearable. They just managed to overcome their conniptions fairly quickly, I think.
I think people who are still fans of Trump are beyond the curve now. I don't think he could do anything, say anything that would really disgust them any more than everybody else has already been disgusted, because eventually you see so much horror that you don't see the horror anymore, right?
Yeah.
And with him, I don't think people can see the horror anymore.
Well, we will find out, because Simon Marks will join us at 12:30 relay some of the horrors, some of the latest horrors, and we can find out whether or not we are disgusted. But I think Dan's probably right in the context of people who just won't be. Anybody really who's used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome with a straight face to describe the appalling, I mean, the unbelievable horrors that have been inflicted upon the United States of America, the world, and their allies. Anybody who uses that phrase with a straight face is probably incapable of disgust, or either that, or they sort of have a sort of chronic lack of curiosity, or an inability to even understand the most basic premises. It's as if you took the worst kind of tabloid newspaper from the 1970s or the 1980s and turned it into a human being. And they said, no, hang on a minute, we've been programmed to like this guy. I don't know why. We've been programmed to like this guy. All of the evidence is that he is utterly, utterly appalling. Let's just shout abuse at the people pointing out how appalling he is. And that's how you end up with the phrase Trump derangement syndrome in common parlance. Literally a position that you wouldn't be able to hold for more than 3 nanoseconds if you exercised the tiniest amount of effort in seeking to understand and analyse events. 11:45 is the time.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
We're joined now by Leila Cunningham, reform UK member for Westminster City Council. Whenever there are accusations of anti-Semitism, we need to take them seriously wherever they occur, mustn't we?
Well, you can't take every accusation seriously, because some of them are just a political attack.
Do you think that all of those people who've come forward, it's all part of a political smear, political attack?
Yeah, I do. I have full faith in Nigel, and I know that he's not an anti-Semite. I know he's not a racist.
The perception of what they experience may be rather different to what Farage thinks. Maybe his memory is wrong.
Maybe their memory is wrong.
It's not necessarily binary, like, it's not just saying he's definitely a racist or he's not. You could be saying that actually he's just handled this insensitively.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are. Thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in Year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:49. I loved that quote. I hadn't heard it before. Don't watch the execution, watch the crowd. I came across another one yesterday. The problem with my cultural life. Pull up a chair. The problem with my cultural life is I can't remember whether I got this from a video game, a book, or a TV programme. But somewhere, one of the things I've been enjoying lately contained the line, don't abandon ship just because you can't control the winds. And it made me think of that lovely caller we had yesterday who said he'd stopped listening to the programme. Because the, I mean, obviously he'd started again, otherwise he wouldn't have rung in. That would have been weird. But he was, as we all do sometimes, just finding the constant attacks upon decency and upon, if you'd like, democracy, upon everything that we hold dear, everything that holds us together, the network of obligations that binds us all, the constant attacks on them from the likes of Trump and his pound shop equivalents in this country, so dispiriting and draining. But I thought that was quite an inspirational response. Unfortunately, I only came across it several hours after the show had finished. But you don't abandon ship just because you can't control the winds. And the last word on that goes to No Hostages, talking about that Oval Office encounter. The real story of the year, they write, was the emergence of the axis of illiberalism. Trump, Putin, Orban, Netanyahu, Musk, Thiel, and in the UK, Farage and Robinson. Different countries, but the same pattern. Hollow out democracy, normalise aggression, rule through grievance. Which brings us to Andy Hughes and our crime correspondent's latest adventures in the world of, what do we call it, Christian nationalism?
Yeah, been looking into the rise of Christian nationalism in the UK. Now, this is a relatively new type of Christianity here, one which is more militant, more political and more aggressive. It's very similar to an ever-growing movement in the US, which really started during President Trump's election campaign and first term in the mid-2010s. And recently, this movement in the UK has attracted many supporters from the far right, including Stephen Yaxley Lennon, also known as Tommy Robinson.
Christianity we're talking about now.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So,
love thy neighbour, Christianity.
Yeah, but not the other one.
Okay.
So he is now the de facto leader of this movement. The Church of England and other Christian institutions have said that this is a cynical attempt to weaponize religion and has accused this new movement, this ever-growing movement, of corrupting Christianity. Yaxley Lennon organised an event last weekend outside Downing Street.
Another one?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Have you got a job?
Well, no comment on that one. But it certainly wasn't as big as his previous ones. It was about maximum 1,000 people there. One thing that stood out was the speakers. Many addressing the crowd, talking about the Lord Saviour Jesus Christ, but in the same breath, talking about migrant hotels and how they need to take back the country. So I had a chat with some of them, and this is what they told me.
The Church of England is completely corrupt as anything.
What do you think about the politicisation of Christianity?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like on the stage today, we had people talking about asylum hotels and stuff like that.
I mean, so when it comes to asylum hotels, people come in here illegally. So we're a life raft to the world. We want to help the world. You know, we fought the world wars. You know, we fought for freedom. But we also want people to respect our nation, to come here on legal terms and conditions, respecting the rules of this country.
And you've got to say to yourself, why is Britain gone the way it has gone? And why is the British government caving in to a foreign religion? Why?
What foreign religion are you talking about?
I'm not wanting to mention it, but you know what I mean.
Well, why don't you spell it out for me?
Go for the Muslims. Why is the British government backing the Muslims?
And what do you think Tommy Robinson becoming a Christian will do for this movement?
He says it as it is. You can look Tommy in the eye, and it's like your old William Wallace. It's true to the core. He's one of our modern heroes. He's a modern Braveheart.
A lot of people say he's a liar.
That's easy to say. It's easy to say lies. But go and do your research, your proper research. Doesn't matter if you don't like Tommy or not. We're not all perfect. And at the end of the day, as Tommy stood up and he's taken the hits, just like Christ did, he taken the hits.
So you compare him to Christ?
I wouldn't compare him. I compare him as a disciple.
So not quite comparing him to Christ, but comparing him to a disciple.
Assault occasioning actual bodily harm.
Yes.
Assault with intent to resist arrest. That was when an off-duty police officer intervened in a street argument between him and his then-girlfriend. Mm. There's assault for headbutting a man in Blackburn. Public order offences for leading a group of football hooligans into a brawl. I think that got a football banning order as well. The use of the false passport, that is some people's favourites because it is, of course, technically an immigration offence. Mortgage fraud, but God forbid he would ever be described as a liar. A fraud by misrepresentation. Stalking and harassment of journalists, rather more recent events there. I suspect we could go on. Oh, there's contempt of court, of course, in grooming gang cases. How did they think these lads would feel about asylum mangers as opposed to asylum hotels?
Well, you've got to ask them. I mean, interestingly, obviously, you've just detailed his long criminal history.
Some of it, Andy.
Forgive me. It was in jail, he said, that he accepted the Lord Saviour Jesus Christ. This is what he told the crowd there.
I'll just say, in 15 years of activism, hundreds of demonstrations, hundreds of gatherings, this is the most beautiful moment I've had in my life as an activist. But when I went to prison, I met a pastor, and betrayed by the church and away from Christianity. As I knew the Quran and I knew Islam and I didn't know the Bible and I didn't know Christianity. But as I started understanding the Bible and the pastor done lessons with me for the life of Jesus, I understood that Jesus would have stood against the establishment. He would have stood with the sinner.
So there you go. Listening to Tommy Robinson sing Silent Night on a Christmas Carols concert was not on my list of things I expected to be doing in 2025.
It's German, I think, originally, isn't it?
Yeah.
Silent Night. Bible was he reading? Do we know? Was it the one with the Gospels in it? Matthew, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me. Mm. I like Luke as well, 10:27, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbour. Mm. As yourself. We could, of course, go on, but time is against us. I presume there was a collection.
He did say at the end, this isn't for free. This costs money to put this event on, and he urged everyone to go to the website to make a donation.
Which reminds me of what Jesus did in the temple with the moneylenders, the polar opposite of fundraising, really.
Yeah.
But amen, I suppose. The only correct response to that adventure. Do you think, on a more serious note, Andy, that we will be seeing more of these ludicrous attempts to hijack Christianity in pursuit of a far-right agenda?
Yes. I think him joining and becoming the de facto leader of this movement will definitely gain momentum. We've seen time and time again, whatever movement he nails his mast to, he brings his followers. So expect to see more of these events in 2026.
And Finally, in terms of the transatlantic parallels, abortion is usually very high up on their agenda.
It
These
is.
Are people who claim to be very, very pro-life,
yes.
But also, of course, hate lots of lives if they are already born,
yeah.
If they've already become life. I can't quite see, I mean, opportunism aside, I can't quite see that fitting into this project or this plan.
No, I agree. There was certainly no mention of that. It was all take back control, attack Islam and migrant hotels. That was the rhetoric of the day.
Do we know what their thoughts were on fighting age magi coming from the east with you know, mysterious presents for Jesus and things? Do we know what's wrong? Why did they cancel White Wise Men?
Well, funnily enough, that didn't come up, James. Well, I tell you what, though. One thing was really interesting. Well, hardly interesting. But all of the people there, they clearly see Tommy as a massive hero. And they do see him, as that man said, as a disciple, which is... critics are saying quite dangerous.
Yes, well, we should keep an eye on this and indeed all the other developments or indeed all of the other evidence that supports no hostages analysis that I read out just before. The real story of the year was the emergence of the axis of illiberalism. Trump, Putin, Orban, Netanyahu, Musk, Thiel, and in the UK, of course, Farage and Robinson, and that woman that Lewis Goodall had on as well. Just there, a nice little reminder there of the kind of work Lewis will be doing in this slot early next week. I enjoy a well-earned break. Different countries, same pattern, hollow out democracy, normalise aggression, rule through grievance, to which we can probably add co-opt Christianity, because it seems to go hand in hand. Quick fact check, I'm told, and I have no reason to doubt the information, that Silent Night was originally Austrian, not German, which is a mistake people often make with Adolf Hitler. It's coming up to 12 noon. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to an end of year. I make no mistake for this, no apology rather. I fully acknowledge, fully recognise, not everybody breaks up in 1 hour's time, but I do, and it is Friday, and often on Fridays you allow me to indulge some of my less news-based enthusiasms, some of my less political enthusiasms. In fact, quite often it becomes Culture Corner, doesn't it? Or Cultural Corner. One of my all-time favourite authors, who has written a ton of books, and I believe I've read every single word he's ever written, has said something really interesting about literacy and getting young people to read, but I'm not sure I agree.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday. President Zelensky has thanked European Union leaders for defending the future of our continent. They struck a deal overnight to loan the country 90 billion euros, but it'll be funded by borrowing and not frozen Russian assets. Vladimir Putin's used his customary end-of-year address to accuse Kiev of refusing to end the conflict, and he said Europe had failed to rob Russia of its impounded funds.
Stealing, this is when someone is doing it secretly, and they are doing it openly. This is a robbery. Why they failed to implement this robbery? Because the consequences can be really harsh for the robbers.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has welcomed the loan deal. She says the UK will work with its partners to urgently consider options to ensure Ukraine gets the funding it needs. Ministers say they are pretty confident visa applicants' details are not in the hands of Chinese hackers. It's reported a Beijing-linked gang was behind a cyber attack on Foreign Office servers 2 months ago. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
We've had it confirmed this morning that the Foreign Office was hacked back in October, that there was data taken as part of that, and an investigation is underway. Now, there had been reports last night that thousands of confidential documents, potentially including the details of visa applicants, had been taken. Although we are told this morning from ministers that they're pretty confident information about individual people is not at risk here.
A teenager charged with the murder of a 9-year-old girl in Somerset has appeared in court. The 15-year-old boy, who cannot be named because of his age, is due to go on trial in June next year. He's accused of killing Aria Thorpe in Weston-super-Mare on Monday. The man who disarmed one of the Bondi Beach attackers has been handed a cheque for $2.5 million Australian dollars. A fundraiser was set up for Ahmed Al-Ahmed after Sunday's shooting, in which 15 people died. He is credited with preventing further deaths after intervening.
The new leader of Catholics in England and Wales has been appointed by the Pope. Bishop Richard Moth will become the 12th Archbishop of Westminster, replacing the retiring Cardinal Vincent Nicholls. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was at 98.39. That is up 2 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers, the best of the conditions in the south and east. A high of 11 Celsius. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. I didn't do the thing, but I can do it now. I didn't reveal the answer to the missing word round. Blank, row, threatens, £25 million stately home plan. Did anybody get it correct? I think a few people did, which means you cheated. That's what I love about this competition. It's impossible to correctly guess the correct answer, which means anybody who gets it right is cheating. And I am here to say so. Badger is the answer. Badger row threatens £25 million stately home plan. It gets better. It's an albino badger. It gets better. It's an albino badger called Alberto. Alberto, the albino badger, apparently stalks the land around the Grade 1 listed Parnham House, and according to conservationists, this is such a rare occurrence that you can't undertake the £25 million restoration of a 16th century stately home because it might disturb Alberto, the albino badger. I'm not making this up. I mean, sometimes these stories turn out not to be quite as they are originally presented. But the problem with being an albino badger is that you get attacked by all the other badgers. It's more great replacement theory, isn't it? It's an albino badger. What have they got against white badgers? I do not know, but apparently it's no fun being an albino badger. And that is why the planning proposals could be held up. There is zero evidence, says the project manager at the estate, of any badgers within 30 metres of the proposals, as documented in the application and surveyed by specialist consultants. The evidence of a single albino badger dates back to 2015, and it wasn't even on our estate. Now, this is what Keir Starmer talked about. This isn't the topic for the next hour, by the way. But people didn't pay enough attention to that, because we're quite lazy, and it's quite complicated. Keir Starmer talked about planning applications being held up by relatively ludicrous complaints, and indeed by relatively ludicrous people. Private Eye have done extraordinary work on like one or two people. There might be one person. It's like a serial litigant. They obviously get some bizarre kick out of holding up developments, because that's all they can ever do is hold them up. But if you honestly are citing a sighting, oh, don't you love the English language? If you're citing a sighting, different spelling, same word. Do you know what they're called? Is it homonyms? I think they're called homonyms. Sighting and sighting are homonyms. So if you're citing a sighting of a badger in 2015 as a reason why you can't do some work on a stately home in 2025, you're probably proving Keir Starmer's point for him. But anyway, I digress. That is the solution to the missing word round, badger. I've got another one for you, which you almost certainly will know the answer to, and which I can guarantee nobody would guess in a million years if they were coming at this cold. Timothy Chalamet is the focus of this one. It comes from yesterday, and I love it, but everyone else says it's too easy. I think you overestimate how much attention other people pay to the news. How do you pronounce his name? Did I say Chalamet? Yeah, that was deliberate, just to make sure people were paying attention. Timothy, that's how you pronounce his first name, by the way. I don't know how the ignoramuses I work with pronounce it. Timothy Chalamet. Timothy Chalamet. Doobie 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 doo. Here's a missing word around for you. Ready? Chalamet names singer blank blank as one of greatest Britons. That's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, where would you even begin on this? Ray Davies? Liam Gallagher? I don't know. I mean, who would it be? Chalamet names singer blank blank. Harry Styles? Nope. Annie Lennox? No. Chalamet named singer blank blank as one of greatest Britons. And if you can guess that, then I'll give you the money myself. I found that sighting of a sighting quite exciting, as Robert points out. Not actually a homonym, exciting, but I see what you did there, and I like it. Simon Mark's on the way at 12:30. One of my favourite full disclosures of the year on the way. It's already available, actually, on the Global Player. Some of you are already sharing your joy at listening to it, but I'm not going to officially release it until a little bit later this hour. Instead, I'm going to turn your attention to a story I love, and I don't know what angle we will take on it, because there are a few. It features an author who I can confidently say I've written, I think, every single word that he has ever published. Not written. I haven't read his like shopping lists or his will. But I've read, I think, every single word that he has ever published. And when you consider that he's written a lot of books, I'd say probably in the region of 30 or so books. That's quite nice. There aren't that many authors. Are you like me? When you find one that you like, do you just inhale everything they've ever written? You find someone that you like. And even if you're coming into a series quite late, you know that you're actually not going to rest. I did it most recently probably with Anne Cleves, with the Vera novels, and then with the Shetland novels, and I just know that I'm not really going to read anything else. I've always got a fancy book on the go, Salman Rushdie at the moment, and a thriller. I've always got a fancy book and a thriller on the go for my mood, for depending on what mood that I'm in. It's the new Rushdie. And I know that when I'm in a thriller zone, when I'm in a thriller rut, I'm going to read every book by an author sometimes. Not doesn't happen that often, but when I'm in that zone, I'm going to read every single book by a given author until there aren't actually any left. And with Lee Child, because it is him of whom I speak, it goes beyond that into actual what I call hardback territory. So if I am in, and these days it's usually Morrison's, actually, where I see a brand new hardback by this author, and I just have to buy it. Even if I'm skint, I'm having it. All right, that's a bit of an exaggeration. I'm no longer skint enough these days not to be able to afford a hardback book. But when I first started buying Lee Child hardbacks, because I can't wait for the paperback, I probably was sometimes a little bit skint. At least I should have waited until payday before buying something as expensive as a hardback book. But I didn't. And Lee Child is very much the author in that category. I've also got a memory of, and by published I mean in books, I haven't read all of his journalism, but I've also got a memory of him having a bit of a set to with another author I admire enormously, another novelist I admire enormously, who is more of a literary author, who has also recently written an episode of Slow Horses, actually, on the telebox. And I don't want to over-egg this one because I may be slightly misremembering it, but I think there was a bit of a dispute about the nature of literary fiction. And Lee Child very much arguing the corner that it's nowhere near as easy to write a brilliant thriller as writers of literary fiction sometimes rather snobbishly suggest. I couldn't pick a side in that argument because I haven't managed to write either. I've tried to write literary fiction, I've tried to write a thriller, I've failed miserably at both. I am, however, a best-selling non-fiction author, so yeah, let's not be too hard on myself. And what he's done today is suggest that too much of the literature taught in schools puts children off reading. He says, I can totally understand why, if you're an English teacher and you've read all your life and you love this stuff and you've been to university, then you want to introduce the big, major masterpieces. But that's too much for kids. He was speaking at HMP Doncaster, actually, a Category B prison where he was holding literary sessions for inmates in what he said he hoped would become a national programme. I'm really hoping, well, I think we've asked a few times, I'd love him to come on Full Disclosure. I'm fascinated by both the writer and the man. And there's another reason why he would be a wonderful chap to talk to. It's his third visit to Doncaster, and at the sessions that he does with prisoners, he listens to men talking about their own writing and he offers them feedback. What a wonderful thing to do. And the best advice he thinks he can give them is to say, write about yourselves. And then he says something that will not come as a surprise to anybody who's ever read a Jack Reacher novel. My books are about Jack Reacher, but they're really about me. It's what I want to be, what I want to do, how I would live if I could. If you're not familiar with his work, they are Westerns, but they're set very much in the modern world. So you have the, he's a former military policeman, American, although Lee Child, I think, is from Wolverhampton, actually. He arrives in a town. He's like a kind of John Wayne character, or a Clint Eastwood character in a Western, a man with no name almost, except he's got a name, obviously. Jack Reacher. But the premise of every novel is that he arrives somewhere new. He doesn't have a home. All he travels with is a toothpaste. When his clothes get dirty, he buys new clothes. All he has is a bank card and a toothbrush, and the toothbrush isn't even permanent. And he just tours the United States of America by Greyhound bus. He visits jazz clubs if he wants to, and every now and then, every novel, he arrives in a town where a massive scandal is, where some right old baddies are up to no good, and he cleans up that town. He cleans up that town. And so it's a Western, really, except it's not. It's also a samurai novel. It's that classic trope of a good guy, a lone gunslinger, turning up in the middle of a very, very corrupt community, a very corrupt society. He's from Coventry, of course, not Wolverhampton, my apologies. And he cleans it up. So it's as old as the hills. But he is brilliant. He's one of those novelists who makes you realise how hard it is to be a brilliant thriller writer. Otherwise, everyone would be doing it. I've read a lot of thrillers. And Lee Child is pretty close to being a class apart. He's pretty close to being in a class of his own. And I could not tell you why. Because the books are formulaic. They are in many ways repetitive. And yet they are uniformly brilliant. And there is never a single moment, even if, like me, you've read all 30 or however many he's written, there's never a single moment where you find yourself thinking, oh, here we go again. I don't know what it is that he does. I think he's just done Desert Island Discs as well with the inimitable Lauren Laverne, who won a lovely award actually the other day on Radio 4, which was richly deserved. Not that anyone listens to Radio 4, of course, when they could be listening to me instead, because we are actually more popular among 16 to 34 year, no, what was it? 34 to 50. Anyway, the people that matter. And what Lee Child has said, I think I would have disagreed with, many years ago. You all matter, of course. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I think I would have disagreed with this. I think even when we met, I was of the view that literary fiction, the biggies, the big ones, that, you know, whether it's the ones that are relatively easy to read, like your Dickens or your Austens or your Brontes, or the ones that are much harder to read, like your Joyces, or your Hardys. I find Hardy quite hard to read until I get stuck into it. But the novels that are, what word would you use to describe them? What word would you use to describe? I mean, literary doesn't really touch the sides, does it? But I would have argued that young people need to read these books and that they deliver something different from what you get from easier to read books. So there are two phone-ins here. I'm sure that you've spotted them both already. The first is he right? The first is he right? It should we be using thrillers, as in, you know, page turners, a Lee Child, a Dan Brown, I don't know, an Anne Cleves, a Colin Dexter, a Mark Billingham, he's good. Should we be using thrillers to, in classrooms? This is the crucial point. No one is suggesting that kids shouldn't read them or should read them or anything like that. But should we be using thrillers in classrooms to inculcate an enthusiasm for reading? I'm really not sure that we should. So I had English teachers, and obviously with an education like mine, my parents are paying a premium for me to have access to this sort of privilege. But we would do books in class, and my English teachers would suggest things I might want to read outside class. And sometimes they were not what you would call heavy. I remember one English teacher really loved H.E. Bates. You remember The Larkins? It was filmed with David Jason, wasn't it? And latterly, I think, with Bradley Walsh. The Darling Buds of May. A beautiful books. They're so, I mean, it's almost like the word bucolic was invented for that series of books written by H.E. Bates. He also wrote slightly heavier sort of romance novels. I read one called Fair Stood the Wind for France, which was much harder to read. But the Larkin family sagas are the easiest books in the world to read. But we never studied them in class. In class at the time, we would have been studying Probably a bit of Dickens, probably not quite Jane Austen. What do you sort of do around 12, 13 in terms of literary? If you're doing English literature just before GCSEs start, what kind of books are you reading back then? You know what I mean, though? You're not reading stuff from the W.H. Smith or the Heathrow Airport Top 30. You're probably doing a bit of Steinbeck, aren't you? Probably everyone's done Of Mice and Men, which is easy to read and quite short as well, but still it's literary fiction. So that's question number one. Should they be doing thrillers in class? Yes or no? What difference do you think it would have made to you? Why are you opposed to this idea? And that's going to lead us into the second question, all right? 0345 6060973. I'm 53 years old. I don't have a degree in English, but I have an A-level and... Does anyone ever mention S-levels? Are they still a thing? I have an A-level and a rather high-grade S-level, actually. They even told me where I came in comparison to the rest of the country, which my kids find incredibly boring. But I love it, and you can tell from listening to the programme. I've always read a lot, and I love it. I don't know what the difference is between literary fiction and everything else. I can't put into words exactly what it is that Lee Child is talking about when he uses words like big major masterpieces. What is the difference between a big major masterpiece and a stone-cold classic of the thriller genre? Some thrillers... I can bore for England on this subject, as you've probably already worked out. For me, some thrillers really walk the line. Mick Herron, latterly, probably walks the line between literary and genre. Eric Ambler, Jean Le Carré, probably walks the line between literary and thriller. But none of that actually takes away the relevance of the question that I'm asking you. Lee Child calls them big, major masterpieces. Usually we refer to them as literary fiction as opposed to popular fiction. What is the difference? How would you explain the difference? Because I'm dashed if I know. 0345 6060 973. Oh, we did a lot of John Wyndham at that age as well, but that's probably generational. I bet they're not reading The Day of the Triffids now, are they, when they're 12, 13 years old? And what was the other one? Richard Hannay. What's it called? He's fighting Nazis. That's a thriller. That's not a big major. So by the time you're getting up to GCSE level, it's big major masterpieces. Should they be studying thrillers instead? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And what is the difference? What is the difference between the two types of books that Lee Child is talking about? The thriller and the big major masterpiece. And I don't mean in terms of plot or... Well, maybe I do, actually. I shouldn't be putting words into your mouth. I hate book snobbery, but I think I probably suffer from it. And I want you to tell me what, A, you think about the plan or the proposal that they should study these books in class, and B, the difference between the kind of books they do study and the kind of books that the absolutely brilliant Lee Child is talking about. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Redknapp. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gamblerware.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 22 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I hate book snobbery. And it probably, as Philip points out, it impacts more on the people around you than it does actually on yourself. And yet, I think I get something out of literary fiction, different but not necessarily better than what I get out of thrillers. So I'm fascinated by Lee Child's suggestion that too much literature is taught in schools. It puts children off reading, and if we made thrillers part of the curriculum, we would enthuse them in ways that they are not currently being enthused. Is he right or is he wrong? And can you have a crack at describing the difference between the two types of book that we're talking about? David is in Bath. David, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello, mate.
Firstly, kind of, I find this fascinating. We've got a one-year-old daughter and she is obsessed with books to the point where kind of every single Christmas present she has is books.
One? A one-year-old daughter?
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't read them. She turns and takes them. So,
I was getting parent envy.
I think to answer your second question first, actually, weirdly enough, I think a literary book is something you study rather than read for an enjoyment as such. So I did International Baccalaureate at sixth form.
Yeah.
And part of that is you have to study English. English hasn't always been my strongest point, but I have enjoyed reading books for the sake of reading.
Yes.
And it definitely made me not enjoy reading as much as I used to because of the having to break down. Yeah, and it put me off till I'm 31 now. It put me off reading till about this year, where I've started to get back into it.
Gosh.
That reading kind of whodunit kind of situations, a first-person murder mystery style, is my favourite kind of go-to now. We're lucky enough we've actually got a shop in Bath called Mr. B's, who are incredible at recommending it, and you can feel their passion.
Oh, that's nice. Books. I saw a lovely thing today. There's an article about Daunt books in Marylebone, and I loved this because it tallied entirely with my own thinking. Someone went in and asked for a mother-in-law loves C.J. Sampson books, the late C.J. Sampson, who wrote the Shard Lake Mysteries, and they asked the bookseller to recommend some. And the bookseller said Andrew Taylor and Laura Shepherd Robinson, which is exactly like literally, I'd have added S.J. Paris to the list, but they are literally the authors I would have recommended to a C.J. Sampson fan. I love it when booksellers can do that. It's such a gift. But don't get distracted from the central question, David, by my witterings.
So, I think from that is, obviously, like I said, when I was sixth form, I did Baccalaureate, and I studied Great Gatsby, Handmaid's Tale, and Albert Camus' The Stranger were the three books we did our final exam. And literally going into every point of every single book of those to kind of find symbolism, to find the meaning of every word that's written, it does suck the joy out of reading.
So I don't know if that's what he's saying, though, because if you're studying thrillers in class, you're probably going to have to study thrillers as well. But I'm depressed to hear what you say, though.
I think it could show the joy. Sorry to interrupt that. I think it could show the joy of reading different genres of books and different, without sounding kind of snobbish there, the different levels of writing ability that different authors have.
I don't know what the different levels are. That's the other question. But there was nothing to stop you reading thrillers while you were also studying Gatsby and The Handmaid's Tale.
Didn't have time because I was too busy revising because, I mean, IB, you have so many other subjects.
There's a big difference between you and me, probably. I bet you got better grades than I did as well, although not in S-level English. Thank you, David. Julie's in County Durham. Julie, what made you pick up the phone?
It was just, I disagreed with Lee Child because I've tried all sorts to encourage my kids to read. And it was after reading Shakespeare and Jane Austen in school that my 15-year-old daughter has just suddenly got into reading, and she's asked for loads of classic books on her Christmas list.
So that's bought nice.
She wants Virginia Woolf, George Orwell,
I mean, I normally come down like a ton of bricks on people who've done what you've just did, but this is such a lovely story. I'm just going to point out it doesn't make Lee Child wrong. Your daughter may be an exception to the general rule. It's going to obviously be a huge majority of kids are alienated by their experiences in English literature classes, and if they are therefore turned against reading, then finding something that they like reading is probably a brilliant idea.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I just think these days everything's so trivial, and I think for her it's a bit deeper, and I think that's what she finds rewarding.
What did she not enjoy then? I mean, you've got a clever kid there. I would suggest.
Yeah. So she loved like the Harry Potter films, yes, and tried the books, and she was just bored by them.
Really?
Totally. She hated David Walliams. She's the school librarian. She hates David Walliams books.
What about slightly older stuff? She's 15. She could have had a look at thrillers. Well, did no thrillers touch her fancy?
I can't remember the name of them, but she saw some that took her fancy in. It was like a series that was really popular with teenagers, yeah, and I don't think she got through the first one. It was just, it just didn't catch her attention.
Quite precocious then?
Oh, very.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, a good job she's found something then that did actually, yeah, float her boat, because otherwise it would have been quite a frustrating existence to have this intellectual capacity that was going, or intellectual appetites that were going almost entirely unfed. Not to spoil Christmas for anybody, but is she going to get what she wanted in her pillowcase?
We've had lots of trips to TK Maxx, who've got a lot of the classics in at the moment, and she's chosen all the ones that she wants.
I love that. And then, of course, Santa will no doubt be adding to that little bounty, that little collection from his library, his special library. I love TK Maxx. I didn't even know they did books. When did TK Maxx start doing books? I could bore for England about TK. Well, I can bore for England on almost any subject. I think we've established that. John's in Stroud. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think this is very much starting from the wrong place. You know, I wouldn't start from here kind of problem. I don't think there's any point in getting people to analyse stuff that they've got no interest in. Mm. And what you have to do, first of all, is get people interested in it. You know, it's like, I mean, you may remember I'm a writer myself.
I do, yes, of course. But I don't know that let me just nudge you down that road a little bit. I really loved studying English from a very early age. I loved analysing things. So why should I suffer just to accommodate all the kids who didn't? That's a selfish question. I'm framing it as a devil's advocate.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't have that. I'm saying the thing to do is to engender a love of reading in the first place.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I mean by I wouldn't start from here. We need to start this in primary school. And we should make reading for pleasure, you know, a central
part. Are we not doing that? Are we really not doing that?
It's reading for pleasure got mentioned in the national curriculum for the first time a few years back, and I'm not sure how central it is now, but it's not as central as it should be. I mean, Bridget Phillipson announced the National Year of Reading for next year, didn't she?
Yes.
But nobody's quite clear as to what that actually means.
And what do you do? Remind us what you do in schools.
Well, as I say, I'm a writer for children. And,
but you go into schools, if I remember correctly, don't you?
Sorry?
You go into schools and talk to children with your own books as well, I think.
I do, yeah. Yes, so, you know, most recently I've been doing rhyming picture books and poetry, so most of my sessions lately have been about that. And I actually talk about this. I talk about how when, you know, my first experience of poetry really was, right, here's a poem. Let's analyze it. What is the poet trying to say?
Yeah.
And you go through 40 minutes of picking it apart. And eventually, you know, the teacher says, so you see what the poet is trying to say is that war is bad or daffodils are nice or whatever. And I just thought,
don't need to do that. Just feel the flipping thing.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, why didn't he just say that?
Yeah.
You know, could have saved us all this time. He just says, war is
so
bad.
So you're all for it then, Lee Child's support. You just get kids reading and then worry about what they're reading once you've instilled a love of reading, once you've instilled a passion for reading.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say study thrillers because, you know, if you say, let's study thrillers instead of literary works, you're going to get the same thing. They're going to be kids going, Well, I don't want to read about
here. See, that's the bit where he's probably being slightly misrepresented by the way that it has been reported. He's, you know, you get put off it by the big major masterpieces. So get them to, well, he does know. He says thrillers should be on the curriculum. So if they're on the curriculum, you'd probably be studying them. And it's the studying that you're opposed to. I can understand that entirely. Crikey, John, you've made me late for the news. It's 12:31. Simon Marks is on the other side of the headlines with Amelia Cox.
President Putin has accused the European Union of being burglars for trying to use frozen Russian assets to support Ukraine. EU leaders struck a deal overnight to loan Kyiv 90 billion euros, but it will be funded by borrowing. Thousands of confidential documents have reportedly been taken in a cyber attack on the Foreign Office. It's been reported a Chinese group was behind the hack, but ministers say it's not clear who is to blame. And a teenager charged with the murder of a 9-year-old girl has been given a provisional trial date for June next year. The 15-year-old, who can't be named because he's too young, is yet to enter a plea. LBC weather, dry and bright across much of England and Wales this afternoon. A few showers in western Scotland, but staying dry in the east. Windy in the north, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
The Lotto £15 million jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve.
You heard that right. Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Exactly. Must be won.
And very exciting news, it could be you.
Me?
Yup, as long as you have a ticket, you're in with a chance.
Well then, I'd best grab a ticket.
Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve, or thousands of you will win a share of the prize. Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Prizes rounded down to the nearest pound. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favorite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, The Cosmetics Company Store, and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Ends 31st of the 12th.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 12:34 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Would you like me to open the LBC advent calendar? I'm going to. Simon Marks is here, of course. He is lurking behind the door. But I was just running through those historical fiction authors that I loved the most a minute ago and referencing the chap in the Daunt Books article who recommended two authors right on the nose. If you like C.J. Sampson, then you will love Laura Shepherd Robinson and Andrew Taylor. But there's another one I would put on that list. And I was racking my brains to remember who it was. Barbara knew. She said, James, if you like those books, you'd love S.W. Perry. I love S.W. Perry's books. It's a sort of Mark series. The Angels Mark, The Serpents Mark, The Heretics Mark. They're brilliant, brilliant books. And his more recent one, actually, fasts forward a couple of centuries. It's set in wartime Berlin, Berlin Duet, which is actually on my bedside table at this moment, waiting for the Christmas break. But what I didn't know until he came to one of my book signings in Stratford-upon-Avon is that S.W. Perry is actually a former LBC face. He worked here as a broadcast journalist many moons ago and went by the name Steve Wood. And Simon Marks at the time, I think, was probably reading the news on Clive Ball's overnight programme.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's extraordinary.
Isn't it?
Because I hadn't thought of the name Steve Wood for a while, and I think you have to go all the way back to the late 70s when LBC was in basement offices off of Fleet Street, which was the first time I ever did any work at LBC. And Steve Wood, if I recall correctly, was one of the principal hosts of an afternoon news programme. It was an 8-hour rolling news program called LBC Reports. And if it is the same Steve Wood, and I presume it is,
I think it is,
that is extraordinary. Clive would definitely have memories of that, probably better than mine, given his association.
All roads lead
was
to
more
LBC.
Full-time than mine.
Of
but
course.
Yeah, absolutely yeah. Extraordinary.
And S.W. Perry. S.W.
Perry,
eh? There
I'm
you go.
Check it out.
Sticking on your Christmas.
Absolutely.
Where do we begin? So I've got written down in no particular order, plaques, which I've kind of covered, Kennedy Center, which yep. I kind of haven't, and then the speech last night.
Well, the speech, 18 minutes,
yeah.
Because he was told he had to come in under 20 minutes, because otherwise the networks were going to basically switch him off. You know, when presidents of the United States announce they're going to do a primetime address, it usually means they've got something enormous to announce or something to address. You do it after the 9/11s, yeah. You do it when you've decided to commit troops to Iraq, and indeed, there were predictions that he was going to announce that the country was at war with Venezuela. Tucker Carlson said that he had it on good authority that that was going to be embedded in the speech.
Yeah.
Of course, what the speech was really about, as these things invariably are efforts at distraction. He wanted to try and move away from the absolutely shameful, disgraceful comments that he made, not just on Truth Social, but in person.
Doubled down,
about,
didn't he?
About the Reiners when he doubled down. But also, it was designed to be a moment when he would say to the American public, look, I feel your pain about the economy as we head into Christmas. I just want to assure you I understand your concerns about prices. I'm addressing it. I'm hearing what you're saying. And this is the second time. The first time was at a rally in Pennsylvania about 10 days ago when he proved completely incapable of actually getting those words out. So he keeps insisting prices are falling when they are not.
Yeah.
And that's not opinion. You can go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture website, the government's own website, the Bureau of Labor Statistics as well, you can see that prices are rising faster than the rate of inflation in the United States, pretty much across the board. 30%, 31% of the public currently say they approve of his handling of the economy.
Unbelievable.
We are, as you know, heading into a midterm election year, which will be a referendum on his presidency, because that's what the White House says they want it to be. They say they're going to put him out there. He's going to be campaigning like it was 2024 all over again, because they believe that he still has the secret sauce to mobilize the Make America Great Again faithful. But if he doesn't find a way of expressing some degree of understanding about what the average Joe is facing in terms of the economy, and instead keeps saying, well, 401, the stock market's booming, so everybody's 401ks are going through the roof. Well, it is true. I mean, I'm one of the privileged to have a 401k retirement account, and it's not only recovered all the money that it lost, it's significantly up on the year. But the vast majority of people in the United States don't have them. And even if you've got one, you can't access the money till you're 59 and a half. So if you're a 30-year-old or a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old going to the supermarket this weekend, that money in your 401k is doing nothing for you as you pay for the Christmas dinner.
Of which the prices on the shelves will be higher.
Yes.
Because there's two lies, really. There's the one about things coming down when they're not, but also the lie about inflation being the worst in 48 years when he took office, when, again, it's not an opinion, it's counting.
Correct.
It simply
yes,
wasn't.
Absolutely. But, I mean, nothing that he said in that speech. I mean, I think you've seen there's this list of 50 falsehoods.
Daily Mirror
told,
did a good job. What,
once every 24 seconds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean,
how do you even make sense of this?
But even if you look even at the point where he's addressing the economy, he claims that Biden and the Democrats looted the Treasury of billions of dollars. And that's what forced, in some fashion, he says, prices up. But as a viewer sitting at home, you're sitting there thinking, wait a minute, they looted the Treasury of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Where's the criminal investigation into that? What,
but it just says anything,
one.
Really.
Absolutely.
I mean, speaking of saying anything, some of it just makes you go, it must be me. I must be missing something. I know he's spoken previously about 13,099 convicted murderers, which no one could find any evidence for. He claimed yesterday there were drug dealers. This is about the people coming from prisons and jails, mental institutions and insane asylums. So there's no evidence to suggest a high number of people entering the US between 2021 and 2024 either had a criminal record or had been detained on mental health grounds. I don't know whether I've asked you this before, but do you think he's got a mental block when he hears the word asylum? He thinks about Arkham Asylum, or he thinks about mental asylums.
I mean, yes, I think it's possible. I mean, he's got...
Nothing else makes sense.
I mean, well, what does make sense, and I think we've really seen this in the last 3 weeks particularly, is that he is extremely bigoted, and I think it's possible to argue that he's a virulent racist. I mean, if you look at the things that he has been saying about Somalis, and again he rounded on them in this speech, it is rooted in fiction about the role that the Somali community plays in Minnesota. Many members of the Somali community, more than 60,000 of them, legally present in Minneapolis, St. Paul and surrounding towns and cities, are playing substantial roles as doctors, as surgeons, as lawyers, as real estate agents. I mean, they are across the board contributing to society and paying taxes. And yet we're now at the point where not only are the doors of the country closed to everyone seeking refuge or asylum other than white Afrikaners from South Africa, but he's also now talking about beginning the process of denaturalizing American citizens. Hundreds and hundreds of them that they want to denaturalize every single month in a bid to engage in remigration. In other words, literally taking passports away from people. And he says that all of these people that have become naturalized citizens, many of them were criminals and they fraudulently got their
US.
There's no evidence for it, any more than there is evidence that the vast majority of Somalis in Minnesota, I think they said more than half of them that were living in Minnesota on visas had lied in their visa applications. They have no possible way of knowing that, and if that's the case, why were they granted visas in the first place?
Is there a change in tone or tactic? The lies are so obvious now, whereas before there was always wiggle room. There was always, if not quite plausible deniability, then, you know, you'd get Kellyanne Conway coming out describing lies as alternative facts and it would work. But this is, I mean, the only phrase I can think of is this is just utterly barefaced.
I think there has been a real change in tone over the last month. I think it's been noticeable. I think it's been marked by statements similar to those that he made. You know, for example, there's nothing quite like it, like about the Reiners. But, you know, all sorts of paroxysms of fury and bile that we weren't seeing before. I suspect that's connected to the fact that he sees his approval rating sinking. He's down, I think, in the latest Reuters Ipsos poll to 39% across the board, 31% on the issue of the economy.
Yeah.
On the issue of lies, by the way, if you look at the numbers regarding Venezuela and the claims that he makes about every speedboat that they've blown out of the water, and there's been more than 20 of them, with more than 100 people at this point killed. He says that every speedboat they blow out of the water saves 25,000 lives in America because of the drugs that they were allegedly carrying to American shores.
Yeah.
He claimed last week that over 250,000 American lives had already been saved as a result of the actions that he's been taking towards Venezuela. If you look at the numbers, over the last year, how many Americans do you think have died as a result of drug overdoses? 82,500.
Right.
So where we get this number that 200,000 American lives have been saved is absolutely
just high in the sky.
Absolutely
plucked out of the air. Good Lord. I've seen one good suggestion as to some of the reasoning behind the Venezuela rhetoric from Asha Rangappa, you know, the former FBI. I keep saying this, but no one is connecting the dots. The war, potential war, because as you say, a couple of days ago, people really thought this was coming in the announcement, is to satisfy the legal preconditions for mass removal domestically of Latinos. So suddenly a lot of people are going to be Venezuelan for the purposes of removal or remigration. This knits together two of the points you've made, and she describes it as 100% Stephen Miller. So if they do make some sort of military incursion into Venezuela, then they can start deporting people that they say are Venezuelan.
Well, and there are many Venezuelans.
And actual Venezuelans.
I was actually in Florida several weeks ago in Doral, which is the city that nestles right alongside Miami, where the Trump National Golf Club is located and where next year Trump will be hosting the G20 summit. Doral is the has the largest presence per capita of Venezuelan exiles, people that are absolutely vehemently opposed to the government of President Nicolas Maduro, that got as much of their money and their possessions out of the country as they possibly could, have parked themselves in Florida and are waiting for what they consider the glorious moment when the Venezuelan government is toppled and they get a chance to go back. I actually interviewed the mayor of Doral while I was there, a Republican supportive of President Donald Trump. Very concerned about the possibility that ICE and the Border Patrol were about to show up in that community and start rounding up Venezuelans. So pretty soon, because of the concentration of that community, particularly in South Florida, pretty soon he's got the potential of having real problems with some of his own supporters, with elected lawmakers and mayors from his own political party who are saying, well, I don't want that happening in my community. I mean, you know, these people are waiting here for the chance to go back to Venezuela. They're not waiting to be chucked out and forced back to Venezuela, where many of them would find themselves potentially in grave difficulty at the hands of the Maduro regime. So there are real potential problems coming, as undoubtedly Stephen Miller makes plans in 2026, encouraged by President Donald Trump, to pick up the pace of mass deportations.
And perhaps one of the best illustrations of the barefacedness of it all is the gasoline claims. I mean, again, not an opinion, just counting. He said gasoline is now under $2.50 a gallon, and in much of the country, by the way, in some states, it just hit $1.99 a gallon. And all you have to do, they've got the, is it the same in the states as here? They've got the bloody great signs outside gas stations. Yeah. You can literally drive past and see how much it is.
So I actually looked this up yesterday because I've been irked by this claim that gas is $1.98, because I can assure you we are absolutely not paying $1.98 in Washington, D.C. And can you find some gas stations in various parts of America where, in a massive giveaway, some of the big box stores have reduced the price to $1.98, $1.99 in order to get you in, because they're gonna sting you when you buy the washing machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a handful of gas stations doing that, but this notion that the price of petrol has come down to $1.99 a gallon, you know, and that's easy to find, is completely specious.
We're gonna run out of time. Any predictions for next year? I think that sums it up, really, doesn't it? Is our microphone good enough to pick up that sound? Thank you very much.
The Democrats are going to fight a war with themselves for the heart and soul of the party. And I think it's very difficult to predict which way that is going to come out. The midterm elections, which are due to take place on November the 3rd next year, are, I think, unlikely currently to be held on time in an entirely free and fair fashion.
Wow.
They may be held on time with all sorts of jiggery-pokery taking place behind the scenes. You may see more troops on American, the streets of Democrat cities across the country. You may see, more Democrats and their leading officials being targeted with potential criminal investigation and prosecution.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of questionable stuff that goes on the election campaign trail. And if things, I mean, look, one thing that didn't catch much attention this week was in a throwaway line. He was doing a end-of-year reception at the White House. And Miriam Adelson, his big money donor, was there. And she was publicly egging him on to go for another term in office and said she had just had a chat with Alan Dershowitz, the lawyer, who had presented Trump with a book all about ways in which you can circumvent the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution and run for a second term. And the crowd started chanting, four more years, four more years. Lord. And we go through this cycle of him wanting a third term, then accepting that the Constitution says he can't have one, so I guess I'm not going to be able to run. But there was the money. Literally, she is the money standing there saying to him, if you do it, I'll give you the cash.
I'm here.
And I think that was a pretty big moment.
Watch this space. I don't think you've been wrong yet. But that's
Well, no, I have been wrong. But
that's for
and will be again.
That's for the edit tape. I think the sigh said it all, even if the words didn't. Simon, thank you. Lots of
cheers,
gratitude coming in from our listeners for the work that you've done throughout this year.
Much.
And we'll continue, well, for as long as you can.
Yes.
We'll continue to do next year. And nearly there for the 401k, 59
absolutely.
And a half.
No, I'm past that now.
Yeah,
it was a banner year.
It's 12:51.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Is the country becoming more racist because of the people or their political leaders? Why, in a maternity crisis, has the government cancelled premature birth targets and that €90 billion loan to Ukraine?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. today and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC with James O'Brien.
12:54 is the time. I may not have time for any more calls, but we can return to it in the new year. Lots of love coming in for Simon, which I shall ensure is passed on, and lots of love for this week's guest. On full disclosure, I don't pick favourites. I'd never say it was my favourite of the whole year because A, they are all wonderful. I love them all. There's only been two that I was unhappy with, and I'm never going to tell you who they were. But this was such a joy. Martin Shaw, who very kindly started sending compliments to the programme a while ago, but for, I mean, not just people of my generation, for all sorts of television viewers and theatre-goers over the years, he's one of those actors who has turned his hand to almost everything. And yet I knew very little about him. And that's why this full disclosure is an absolute treat. So whether you know him from his recent appearances on stage in A Man for All Seasons or from The Professionals back in the day or from George Gently or Judge John Deed a little later in his career or even to go back to the beginning and you saw him in the Polanski Macbeth alongside John Finch as Banquo. He was Banquo, John Finch was Macbeth. It's just one of those hours that you will, I mean, if I say it will fly by, I'm under describing.
I used to go to the Central Jazz Club in Birmingham and listen to traditional jazz. And I met a girl, and she was far more intelligent than me and far more grown up than me. And she wanted to be an actress, and she was going to RADA.
Okay.
And
so what are you now, 17, 18, or a bit younger?
Just coming up to 18.
Just coming up to 18.
And I said, that's in London, and that meant she was going to go away.
Oh.
And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I'll go to RADA then. Half of it was, I think I might have a talent for this.
Right.
But half of it was I didn't want her to go away. And so I auditioned for RADA, and I didn't get in. I got a well done, try again.
Okay.
But at that time, there were three great drama schools. There was RADA, there was Lambda, and there was Central.
Yes.
And I auditioned for Lambda, and I got in, which was incredibly fortunate, because Lambda suited me far better than RADA would have done.
What did Mum and Dad think of this plan?
Oh, they were very worried.
Yes, I bet they were.
Oh, they were very worried.
You've done what?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was, well, they thought it was incredibly insecure.
Yeah, well, they were right, weren't they?
They were entirely right. I just wanted to go where Janet was.
So it wasn't, I was going to say, it wasn't the lure of the grease paint and the roar of the crowd. It was the allure of Janet that was the...
100%. 100%. I mean, knowing what I know now, having done the therapy journey and so on, I think a lot of us have got that impulse inside us to get out.
Yes. That's so much more. I really cannot recommend that one highly enough. And there are a couple from the vault as well during the coming fortnight when I won't be with you. I'm clocking off for the Christmas period in approximately 1 minute's time. But if you find that prospect chilling and even perhaps unbearable, then don't forget that the whole Full Disclosure archive is available on Global Player and indeed on the LBC app. And it is, I mean, it's a magnificent thing. I know I'm involved in it, so it's a bit ripe of me to say that. But the list of great names from public life, actors like Martin and Charles Dance has been on this year, younger actors like Stephen Mangan, Daniel Radcliffe, I think he's popping up on one of the archive episodes over the Christmas period, and then politicians, David Lammy was on this year, Amber Rudd was on this year, and other people that have not necessarily enormous name recognition, but because we've built the audience with the famous people, we can introduce you to people who aren't that famous. It's such a thing of beauty. It really is. I'm so proud of it. And if you're not familiar with it, or you are looking for a bit of company over the Christmas period as you go running or cooking, a lot of people listen to podcasts when they're cooking, you could do a lot worse than Full Disclosure. And that's it from me for another year. Thank you for everything you continue to do for me, which is not just make sure my mortgage gets paid, but also fill me with a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment that I never thought I would find in work. And I do every year, thanks to you. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Have a happy Christmas.
Thank you.
At 3 today, a happy crush on her boss. Both their marriage is already over. Then the Coldplay kiss cam ruined her life, she says. Does Kristen Cabot's story carry a warning for all of us about privacy and about misogyny? More at 3. At 2, why in the midst of an undoubted crisis in maternity care has the government cancelled premature birth targets, for goodness sake? We'll talk about that €90 billion loan by the EU to Ukraine. Former Australia Security Service officer joins us as well today, and we'll look back on the political year with Lewis Goodall of the News Agents. But first up, are any of our political leaders up to tackling the growing issue, I think, of racism in this country? That's next after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, President Zelensky says a loan from EU leaders will truly strengthen Ukraine's resilience as he urged them to release frozen Russian assets. The €90 billion is designed to support Ukraine's military and economic needs over the next 2 years, but it will be funded by borrowing rather than the €210 billion seized from Moscow following its invasion of Ukraine. Shadow Housing Secretary Sir James Cleverly has told LBC that it's vital vital that financial help continues.
We have to send the message both to Moscow and everywhere else in the world that we don't run out of steam, that we don't throw our friends and allies under the bus just because this conflict has run on for years. We've got to stay strong, we've got to support the Ukrainians, and ultimately we've got to make sure that Russia pays reparations to Ukraine after this war is finished.
President Putin has accused the EU of being burglars for trying to use frozen Russian assets to support Ukraine. The government says it is pretty confident the details of visa applicants haven't been compromised following a hack of the Foreign Office. Reports claim a Beijing-linked cyber gang targeted servers 2 months ago. However, ministers have refused to say who's behind it. A woman who plotted to kill her husband with her lover has been jailed for at least 19 years. Michelle Mills and Garay Berry have been sentenced for conspiracy to murder after arranging an attack by masked gunmen in Ceredigion last year. LBC has learnt a target aimed at reducing premature births in England has been dropped. It's the UK's biggest cause of death among children under five. LBC's Helen Hoddenott has more details.
In 2017, the Tories set a target to reduce the rate of premature births by a quarter by the end of this year, a reduction of around 15,000 preterm births a year. That target's been missed, and the government hasn't set a new one, despite the rate slightly increasing. Fiona had five premature births, resulting in lifelong medical conditions for her children, and feels it's an oversight by the government.
It shows such a lack of understanding of the real cost of prematurity. I think that they could have had so much easier lives.
The Department of Health says it's determined to transform maternity and neonatal services.
And Washington DC's Kennedy Center has been given a new name, the Trump Kennedy Center. The White House says it reflects Donald Trump's unbelievable work to help save the 1970s performing arts venue. John F. Kennedy's niece has suggested Mr. Trump also looks at renaming the Lincoln Memorial. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 2 points at 98.34. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather dry and bright across much of England and Wales this afternoon. A few showers in western Scotland, but staying dry in the east. Windy in the north, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Hey Sainsbury's, how can I make my Christmas dinner budget go further this year?
We've got you. With Nectar, you can save a third or more on your Christmas roast. There are big savings on our fresh turkeys, and you can even get selected veg for just 15p. Plus, you can get more deals on all the trimmings.
Now that's music to my ears.
Want to save big on the festive feast? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
Offer ends 24th of December, 18 plus. Nectar required. Selected turkeys only. Available in-store and online, excluded locals. Delivery fees may apply. Subject to availability, T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. It's my last day with you today before the Christmas break. I'm back a week on Monday, so the 29th of December I'll be back with you on air. And in lots of different ways, the stories and issues I want to talk about today, they're not quite a review of the year, but they do look back on and beg questions about some of the stories that we've been talking about all year. And a little later in the programme, I will do a bit of a political review of the year with Lewis Goodall of the News Agents and his own LBC programme on Sundays, of course, as well. He'll join me later to look at not just the party politics of it all, but the events of the year and how they're impacting on our politics too. But with all of that in mind, I want to start with the whole question of racism and community relations in this country, and the degree to which you think, or perhaps don't think, our political leaders, our politicians, are equipped to handle it, guide it, lead it, shape it, for the good of the country. I'll tell you in a bit more detail what I mean. Reform, for example. Chris Parry, the latest reform councillor to get into hot water. He was due to be a mayoral candidate in one of the postponed mayoral elections. And he told David Lammy, the deputy prime minister, to go home, go back home to the Caribbean. Of course, David Lammy is London-born bred, so not only is that racist, it's just offensive to David Lammy. You have the leader of the same party. This is not about reform, by the way. I'm getting to the other parties. You have the leader of the Reform Party, Nigel Farage, and those anti-Semitism claims still biting his ankles. Sarah Potchin, the Runcorn MP, and those adverts that she said she kept seeing and couldn't see a white face on telly, and that seemed to bother her a lot, even though it's not true, is it, that you can't see a white face on television adverts? Far from it. And what about Robert Jenrick's comments, similar to Sarah Potchin's, actually, in Birmingham, when he said it was however long it took before he saw a white face? And even, I don't think Keir Starmer's racist for a second, but even Keir Starmer's clumsy speech earlier in the year about using that term, an island of strangers, we risk becoming an island of strangers. It doesn't suggest a deftness, does it, in handling community relations and just conversations around how we relate to each other across racial and colour and religious lines and belief lines. It's a complex world that we live in. It's a very highly interconnected world that we live in. And it seems to me we need politicians with a sophistication to handle that. And I wonder whether you think we have them, our political leaders. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. I'm joined by Sundar Katwala, the director of British Future, a non-partisan think tank focusing on immigration and identity, and the author of the book How to Be a Patriot. A patriot. How do you say it, Sundar?
Yeah, I mix them up, but patriot, I think.
Okay, I think I say patriot. I can't remember. It doesn't matter, as long as we are one way or another. I decided to take a look at more broadly than just reform. I mean, we know that reform have a few issues hanging around them around all of this, but they're not the only party to do so. And if we are to resolve some of the differences that we have, some of the difficulties that we have, it is an all-party, all-person job, isn't it?
Yes, I think our party leaders, our politicians do struggle to talk about race and racism. I think that's because there are different views in society and they're contested and they're challenged. To some extent, I think we're having a more difficult, more contested debate because of some of the progress we've made, as well as because there are people trying to reverse that progress. I mean, I voted in a general election when I was 18 and there were six ethnic minority MPs out of 650, and now there are 90. And the reason there can be 90 and there can be a black leader of the Conservative Party and South Asian
Prime Minister
of London
beforehand,
Prime Minister, across different parties, across different trends, is for most people the ethnic diversity of Britain is now quite a normal thing. The Conservative Party members are not the wokest people in Britain, but they could prefer Kemi Badenoch's conservatism to Robert Jenrick's conservatism. And for some people, I think that's very challenging. And so, you know, there are political debates about who gets heard, who doesn't get heard. If we take this reform candidate in Hampshire, you know, he could say, I think, if David Lammy is so proud to be British, why is he speaking up for the Caribbean? That we could argue for or against that. But to say go home crosses the line. But to some extent, I think some people are triggered by that presence of diversity that's normal for lots of people, but actually quite novel. And then you have a more polarised debate, I think, between people who say, well, we still clear.